get full access to RFR only on Patreon. Become a member of the RFR Patreon community to get more Rebel Force Radio. Bonus shows and content are available right now only at patreon.com/Rebel Force Radio.
Where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio,
your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary
with Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Star Wars number one.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Oh, boy, it is getting hot now. Things heating up. Star Wars Resistance premiering this weekend. And not only did we get a synopsis of Jon Favreau's live-action TV series, we got our first production photo. This is huge. I mean, this is more pre-promotion than we ever got with Solo. Remember those days? Like, I had a movie's out next week. Can we see a trailer? Yeah. But we're probably a good year and a few months away from the Jon Favreau series debuting on the Disney streaming service, set for a late 2019 debut, and already got our first production image. We got all kinds of news we got to talk about. So we've got Resistance news, of course. We have The Mandalorian, as the show has been announced. Now, we'll talk about whether that's really the title of it, because it's kind of, I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure, but a lot of people are jumping to the conclusion that's going to be the name of the series. But we'll talk about that. Plus, we've got a really special guest in the cantina. Our good pal Kevin Lyle is bringing along his friend, actor Rusty Goff. He was a Jawa. He was Gonk, the power droid, and Cabe, all in A New Hope. And Jimmy Mack had a chance to catch up with them, and you don't want to miss that. So much to talk about this week. And, of course, as I mentioned before, my good friend and yours from Chicago, Jimmy Mack, is here.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. I've seen Solo 5 times. You're right. The marketing wasn't really that effective, I guess.
Well, I'm just excited. We're seeing stuff, you know, for...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This stuff that's coming out, this information that's emerging about the new Star Wars, I guess we call it a live action series. We're not going to call it a television series because it's going to be streaming, so... They're just referring to it, especially in the press release itself, as a live-action series helmed by Jon Favreau, and I can confirm the name of the series is indeed The Mandalorian. It is going to be called The Mandalorian.
That is for sure.
That is absolutely for sure. It's even italicized in the Lucasfilm press release that I have here in front of me.
All right.
So I'll just read the press release. Details emerge for Lucasfilm's live-action series helmed by Jon Favreau. Production on the first Star Wars live-action streaming series has begun. After the stories of Jango and Boba Fett, another warrior emerges in the Star Wars universe. The Mandalorian, italicized, is set after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order. We follow the travails of a lone gunfighter in the outer reaches of the galaxy, far from the authority of the New Republic.
The series will be written and executive produced by Emmy-nominated producer and actor Jon Favreau, as previously announced, with Dave Filoni, Star Wars The Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, directing the first episode. Live action, baby!
Yes!
That's our boy, Dave Filoni. We knew him when. Additional episodic directors include Deborah Chow, Jessica Jones, Rick Famuyiwa, Bryce Dallas Howard, Soulmates, and Taika Waititi, Thor Ragnarok. Of course, executive produced by Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, Kathleen Kennedy, and Colin Wilson. Karen Gilchrist will serve as co-executive producer. So they're saying stay tuned to StarWars.com for updates. I say stay tuned to Hollywood Reporter because they seem to have all the Star Wars scoops these days.
Yeah, that is true. You're absolutely right about that. Every once in a while, you'll notice there's a certain golden child when it comes to breaking Star Wars news. It could be Entertainment Weekly. It could be USA Today. And right now, I think it is THR, the Hollywood Reporter. By the way, keeping it in the family, Bryce Dallas Howard, daughter of director of Solo, Ron Howard. So that's right. You know, Richie Cunningham's daughter is going to be directing an episode of the live action Star Wars.
That's fantastic. It runs in the family. Later on the program, we have some clips of Bryce's Uncle Clint, as he was a guest on Dennis Miller's radio show, or is it Dennis's podcast?
It's a show. I just call him a show. I don't know where they come from anymore.
Who cares? It's like the TV show question. Well, what's a TV show anymore?
Live action series, podcast, radio show. Who cares? It's a show.
All right. Well, hey, we've got a show right here, so let's get it going. We've got our first voicemail about The Mandalorian right here on Rebel Force Radio from beautiful Southern California. Take it away.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Jimmy. This is the Register Nerd here in sunny, beautiful Southern California. So I just heard about Jon Favreau's, series, The Mandalorian. Well, guys, I'm not entirely sure. I'm going to watch it. I'm probably going to enjoy it. But are we kind of done with the Mando thing? I feel like we've had quite a bit, and don't get me wrong, I love the Clone Wars arcs. I think they were just fantastic. A little bit with Rebels. Of course, we saw them a little bit in the prequels. What do you guys think? Is it going to be awesome, or are they going to kind of kill the Mando thing? I don't know. Let me know what you guys think. Love the show. Have a good day. Bye.
Here's what I think, Registered Nerd. I think you need to find yourself a time machine.
Yes.
I think you need to go back about 20 years and tell yourself, hey, Registered Nerd, in 20 years, there's going to be a frickin' live-action TV show about frickin' Mandalorians directed by Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. And of course, 20 years ago, you might not know who those guys are. But still, the point being, come on! I don't know how I feel about it. I'm probably not going to watch it, but it's probably going to be good. Dude, I love you. I understand. But come on. If we can't be happy about this, what do we have to be happy about? A live-action TV series. If you want to get your Star Wars jollies, you got to be looking at The Mandalorian. I mean, you're certainly, it's from the sounds of you, you're not going to be getting it from Star Wars Resistance. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. That's not a bad thing, because I've got a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old in my house, and I think they're going to love Star Wars Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for, you know, it's not for me, it's not for you, but I, based on this production photo, and the fact that it's Jon Favreau, you know, he directed that little Iron Man movie, kind of got the Marvel Cinematic Universe off to a good start there with that film. And you got Dave Filoni on there, who I think probably balances the whole young kid, lifelong fan thing pretty well. I think we have nothing but good things in store, really. I mean, give it a shot. I understand there's probably some post-Last Jedi trepidation going on, maybe even some post-Solo trepidation, though I got to tell you, the more I watch that, the more I love it. I loved it to begin with, but I'm loving it even more. I just think, Jim, am I being too hard? I don't mean to be critical of you, Registered Nerd. I love you. I'm glad you're a listener, and I'm thankful for the voicemail. But, you know, this is like, you know, when you see in movies where you like the person's hysterical and you have to slap them to, like, you know, wake them up. You know, I feel like I'm just going to slap Registered Nerd and be like, dude, come on.
Get a hold of yourself, nerd.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal. And I get what you're saying with the Registered Nerd and his angst about being feeling a little Mando fatigue, a little Mando fatigue. I get it. I get it. Because, what you know, you're taking one character, Boba Fett, who for years survived on, you know, really riding that wave of mystery. And that was something that really propelled the character beyond his really cool badass armor. And you've got to admit, that's some really cool badass armor that Boba wears. So, naturally, George Lucas decides, well, let's just multiply it. And we'll start off with, you know, showing where Boba came from. And we'll show his dad in the same armor. But in the meantime, in the expanded universe... And in comics, novels, the whole Mandalorian thing was being built up into this big deal. Because the Mando, because it was revealed that Boba's armor was a relic from a warrior race, or whatever, a warrior group.
Our warrior race!
No, 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 no.
I mean, no, I think we got to, wait, do we have a, is this, oh, where, wait. Shoot, hold on a second. I thought we had a clip.
For generations, my ancestors fought proudly as warriors against the Jedi.
Gage.
Defeat me or die like many Jedi before you.
Yeah, Jon Favreau as warriors. Pre Vizsla.
Well, that's warriors. A great thing, too, is there's that synergy where you have Jon Favreau, who created a Mandalorian character himself. And, of course, George Lucas himself. Developed the whole idea of the Death Watch and all that stuff.
Dude, I'm telling you, in all of these stories here covering this, they all talk about how eminently qualified Jon Favreau is because he did a voice of a Mandalorian in the Clone Wars. Now, I don't want to take anything away from it.
I said it was nice synergy.
No, I know what you're saying. I'm saying these stories are saying, well, my God, if there's anybody that's qualified to do this show, it's Jon Favreau. He was in the Clone Wars. And I appreciate the fact that these writers know this, but I appreciate the fact that Jon Favreau was a voice on the Clone Wars and did Pre Vizsla and did a wonderful job and all that. But I would say that there's other qualifications on Jon Favreau's resume that make him a great person here, despite that's sort of a cherry on top, fact that he was Pre Vizsla, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Well, he was Rio, too.
Oh, and Rio, yeah, right.
Blame it on Rio. But, you know, I want to jump in that time machine and go hang out with the registered nerd, because that would be 20 years ago, you said. That would be 1998. And so back then, the registered nerd, he was just the nerd because he wasn't registered at that point. And
that's right.
So we go hang out together, and I could lay the knowledge on him. I say, hey, I know you're excited for The Phantom Menace coming out next year. But wait till you hear this. In about 20 years, there's going to be a show that you'll be able to watch. And you can even watch it on this little screen you carry around in your pocket everywhere you go. You could sit there and watch this show. And it's going to be all about a lone Mandalorian after the destruction of the Empire. And he's going to be out there having all kind of crazy adventures. Are you on board with that? And the just the nerd, because like I said, he's not registered yet.
Not yet.
He would be totally down with it. Totally down with it. But
of course,
again, listen, I can sympathize with the registered nerd because I am one who's felt a certain degree of Mandalorian fatigue. I really enjoyed the story that was being told in the Clone Wars. And the Clone Wars was canceled before that story was really resolved. Thankfully, we'll be seeing it in the Clone Wars revival coming next year. But I just felt like when the story got dragged into Rebels, I felt like it was starting to get stretched a little bit thin. And at the end of the day, I think I liked everywhere it went primarily, but I did feel like, here we go with the Mandos again. Now they're going to dominate another animated series. And now here come the Mandos again to dominate a live action series. Yeah. But any kind of hang up I might have been feeling about Mandalorian fatigue, that all went right out the window when I saw this picture today came from the set of the live action show featuring the Mandalorian that we're talking about, the one that's going to be featured in the show. It's an amazing shot. He looks, to me, it looks like he's on Tatooine, but it's definitely a Star Wars environment.
Now, wait. Hold on. You keep referring to the Mandalorian as a he. We don't know.
Okay, that is true. That is true.
I mean, look at Enfys Nest.
Right, right. So we can't.
Are they going to pull an Enfys Nest on us, Weir? I just want to say this, right? Okay, because going back to the Registered Nerd and you in Mando fatigue, and I understand that as well. However, I don't think that we should automatically assume that because our lead character is a Mandalorian, that they're going to necessarily make that the focus of the show. Clearly, Dave Filoni has laid a lot of track when it comes to the Mandalorian race, their warrior ways. But I'm looking at this, and I don't know, Jim. I'm thinking like maybe sort of like Incredible Hulk A-Team kind of vibe. This guy just kind of wanders from planet to planet. You know, is he chasing down different people? Is he a bounty hunter? If he's a bounty hunter, is he chasing down a different person in each episode? Or is it kind of like The Fugitive where he's after his Dr. Kimball? Was it Kimball? Dr. Kimball. But I see him kind of moving around and affecting the lives. I'm seeing anti-hero here, right? I think if you're going to focus on a character, they're either going to be a hero or perhaps an anti-hero. Someone, you know, just trying to make his way in the universe, a la Jango Fett. But it conjures up a lot of images to me. I don't necessarily see this as being, a show that's exclusively or, primarily going to be about the Mandalorians. I think we just have a lead character who happens to be a Mandalorian.
Right, right. Truly the final Mandalorian, the last of the Mandos. I think, you know, that's what
you
I
think
mean.
So?
Well, I mean, just the whole lone gunfighter ideal. And also that it has always been part of the lore that the Mandalorians who wore this type of Boba Fett-esque armor, they were defeated by the Jedi in the Clone Wars. And we just still haven't seen that happen yet because the damn series got canceled. Mm. We're going to see that because right now the Clone Wars is in heavy production at this point, getting ready for its debut in about a year.
Well, it would make sense that the Jedi would focus in on the Mandalorians because we do know that the Mandalorians were sort of the power was consolidated by Darth Maul. So he would be sort of a lightning rod for the Jedi Order.
This is true, but
Take me to school.
This is true. Well, you know, Darth Maul got taken into custody by Darth Sidious.
Yeah, that's true. We did see that, didn't we? So I don't know. I think that this might be this whole idea of a Jedi versus Mando feud or battle or Jedi wiping out the Mandalorians. That may no longer be canon anymore.
Well, I think we're going to see what exactly the official threads of this story are going to be, because I think it'll tie into the Clone Wars animated series. I think the final series of the Clone Wars is going to wrap up that Jedi versus Mando or Death Watch, whatever you want to call them. It's going to resolve that conflict once and for all. And we might see the lone survivor of that battle be this guy, this Mandalorian, who we get introduced to this week via this lone shot from the set of the live action show. So, and he's just so badass too. I really just am so blown away by him, but he could be the lone survivor. He gets away somehow. So now he's working in the outer reaches of space outside of the influence and authority of the New Republic. He's out on the outer fringes, outer reaches of the galaxy is exactly what the thing says.
Well,
so he's a fugitive. He's a fugitive.
Now,
these are all guesses, you know, but that's what I think.
Yeah. Now, Hollywood Reporter is is doing a lot of speculation, but they're saying that it will explore new ground for the Mandalorians as it takes place long after Jango offered up his DNA to the long-necked cloners of Kamino in the 2002 film Attack of the Clones, where Jango is beheaded by Jedi Master Mace Windu.
Jango Fett, not a Mandalorian.
Well, that's a subject of some debate.
Nope. He is not a Mandalorian, nor is Boba. Boba is a clone of Jango Fett, who was a bounty hunter who somehow obtained Mandalorian armor.
Yeah.
This is truth.
Where is it specifically stated?
In the Clone Wars.
That Jango is not a Mandalorian.
It was Prime Minister Almec on the planet Mandalore who explained that to Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I recently encountered a man who wore Mandalorian armor. Jango Fett.
Jango Fett was a common bounty hunter. How he acquired that armor is beyond me.
Oh, I do remember that now. That was pretty controversial at the time, wasn't it?
Yes, but it's been asked over and over again by even ourselves to Dave Filoni.
In discussions directly with George, he was very adamant about Jango not being Mandalorian, which is the entire reason why that scene existed, that moment.
Yeah. I remember getting lots of voicemails, you know, Jango, Mandalorian, not a Mandalorian. But then, some people would say, well, you know, what's a Mandalorian? Maybe not by blood, but he's picked up the mantle. He's wearing the armor. He's dedicated his life to the...
He was a bounty hunter. A Mandalorian is a true warrior who fights for the pride of the planet Mandalore and the Mandalore system. And Jango was a mercenary for hire. He's really working against all the ideals of a true warrior, a true Mandalorian warrior. Oh, I pulled something doing that, I think. Ouch. My side hurts.
Yeah, well, the fact that Favreau, in his description of the series, describes the character as a lone gunfighter, that certainly does bring out the Western heritage of the Star Wars saga, and something that was very much apparent in Ron Howard's Solo, and I would say that ingredient of the Western are some of the best parts of Solo, in my estimation. So I'm hoping that is something, you know, that's explored here. Now what we see with the character is that he's obviously walking through. This could be like a market. Or something. We see in the background, we see some folks in sort of their, they're sort of wrapped up in their Outlander gear.
Yeah, it looks very familiar. Very familiar.
Yeah, this could be Mos Espa right here. The panels on the doors.
You know, I wonder. I think they'd probably be going for something unique. It does mention that this lone gunfighter, this Mandalorian, is working in the outer reaches of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And Tatooine is, you know, as we know, in the outer reaches of the galaxy. But I think they're probably going to be trying to go for a very heavy Star Wars aesthetic, but they'll still say, no, this is the planet such and such in the so-and-so system. And we'd never heard of it before. And that's where this guy's operating. And it's going to have a lot of the typical Star Wars tropes, if you will. I told Wendy about this because she was with me when I got the email with the press release and the photo and everything. And I said, wow, look at this. Look at that. Because I was freaking out. I mean, I literally lost my nuts when when I saw this photo. And I showed it to her and I'm like, look. And she goes, looks like Star Wars. And that was it. Like, you know, she was like, whatever, guy. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that was, I'm like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, it does.
I said, that's very, you know, if that's your reaction, then I think that's exactly what Favreau and Filoni and all of them are going to be trying to accomplish here with this. Notice the weapon that the Mandalorian has on his back. You can just see the stock of the rifle, and it looks a lot like the same rifle or that weapon that Boba Fett was using in the Star Wars Holiday Special in the animated sequence by Melvana.
Oh, yes.
It looks just like that. And then a lot of people are also saying that they're seeing a lot of similarities between the wardrobe of this Mandalorian and other similar leaked concept art or actual models for the Star Wars 1313 video game. Remember a few years ago, a lot of the imagery had leaked online of what was being developed for that video game that never saw release. So a lot of people are comparing this Mando to another Mando, all the way down to the gloves. And look at the gloves. Are we dealing with fingerless gloves here, or are these part? Is this part of the fabric of his handwear? Because a lot of people are saying, no, look, those are alien fingers. It's like Maz Kanata hands.
No. That's part of the glove.
Remember that Seinfeld when Jerry was dating that girl who had Maz hands? Remember Maz Kanata hands? They were all
No, they're man hands. Man hands.
Oh, I thought they were Maz hands.
She was ripping that lobster open.
Yeah, right. But so what do you think? Do you think it's part of the fabric of the gloves or these
totally
are
part of the fabric?
Okay.
Totally part of the fabric. Look, this isn't going to be some alien. They're not going to make the lead in this TV show or this this series.
Yes.
An alien. There's already speculation that Pedro Pascal is likely, this is from the guy from Game of Thrones, is likely to be the lead actor.
Yes. And it's already been established that Mandalorians are humans. You know, they're made up of
humans. They're humans. Humanoid. Right.
You know, I don't know if all the fixings on, you know, all the gears on the inside are exactly the same, but on the outside, they look like humans. So I don't think that you would want to have this character remove the helmet and you see, like, a Greedo in there. It's like, oh, Rodian, no sh-. You know, it would blow everyone's mind because Rodians are Rodians and Mandalorians are, of course, humans and or humanoid, however you would put it. Now, of course, you can go back and say, well, Jango Fett stole the armor of a Mandalorian. And yes, he was a human, so he was able to wear it perfectly. But could we be dealing with an imposter? You know, someone who I don't think so, because the name of the show is The Mandalorian. So I really think we're going to be dealing.
But wouldn't that be a bit of irony, though, if this was someone who claimed to be a Mandalorian but really wasn't? But then the question is, well, what really is a Mandalorian? Is it about the blood in the veins, or is it about the lifestyle?
No.
Is it about the
it's about your birthright is what it is. It's about who, where you
maybe
come from.
But what if it's about what you believe you are?
I don't think so, because that's just taking the armor. And you know, I don't think so. I don't think the Mandalorians would have an open door policy like that. I just personally don't, based on the way we've seen them portrayed in the Clone Wars.
Well, but what if the Mandalorians don't like this appropriation of their culture by others, and that this guy is he's a maverick? Maybe he's hunting his man or woman or whatever. He could be a bounty hunter and could be appropriating the look and the culture of the Mandalorian race.
Yeah, I like to think of him more as a pure blood Mando, thus the title of the series. And we'll finally actually get to see a real honest to goodness Mando doing Mando things in a live action venue.
But what are Mando things? What are Mando things?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Well, because I said, yo, Jango and Boba, they were mercenaries. They were hitmen. They were assassins.
Yeah.
These guys, I think these guys answer to something more spiritually akin to the way the Klingons operate. Mm-hmm. if I can make a Star Wars, Star Trek comparison. Please don't send me hate mail. Spock suckers. But that's what I think. That's like the ideal I've always had for the Mandalorians. Based on how they've been portrayed in the Clone Wars. And only the Clone Wars. Sorry, Karen Travis fans or video game fans or whatever. It's the Clone Wars is where I get all my information about the Mandos from.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the armor and that whole aesthetic developed because it was a war-torn society. There were always factions and families and clans constantly battling one another. So, of course, they developed a very battle-conscious, battle-ready culture. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they all become bounty hunters or they all become... Mavericks or what have you. The only thing we really get for sure is he's a lone gunfighter.
Right.
Now they don't say gunslinger. Right? I mean, there's a distinction.
Slinger. He's not slinging.
No, but they say fighting. Lone gunfighter.
I think so that plants
the seeds. Is he a gun for hire? Is he a gun for hire? Is he a mercenary? Is he, he's a loner, that's for sure. So a man without a clan. But
maybe he's like Clint Eastwood in those spaghetti westerns from the 60s, The Man with No Name.
Yeah, that's the original genesis of the Boba Fett character, the man with no face, the man with no name.
When you hear gunfighter, lone gunfighter, it instantly takes you back to the Wild West and that environment. And I think that there's something very specific about that wording in this press release. I think we are going to see something akin to an honest-to-goodness Star Wars Western.
Yeah.
I hope there's going to be some space battles, too. But you know what? Maybe there won't be. Maybe this will be, like, really a Star Wars film that, you know, the characters have their feet on the ground. And they're not blasting off into space.
It could be. Hollywood Reporter says, the very notion of lone gunfighter evokes imagery of classic Old West fugitive hunters roaming the wild, untamed plains in search of dangerous outlaws. So, too, could the Mandalorian roll into some dusty backwoods asteroid on the hunt for a nefarious alien gangster, robber, or anyone else who finds themselves unlucky enough to be caught in the sights of his blaster. And by his, many, again, I'll say, are speculating Pedro Pascal, standout from Game of Thrones. I can't really speak about it because I never watched Game of Thrones. I do remember him from he was in Kingsman, the second Kingsman movie. He was Whiskey.
I still have yet
Whiskey.
To see
he
those
turned out
films.
To, oh, well, then I won't spoil it for you.
Yeah, well,
but he's in that, and he's a very colorful character. In the film, and I could see him being, you know, I we were saying before we started the show, we were talking about, well, is this an alien? Is it not? I said it's not going to be an alien. It's going to be an anti-hero. It's going to be a handsome kind of rugged dude under there that's going to hop from system to system, planet to planet, not wanting to get tied down, but always sort of getting attached to whatever particular case he might be working on. I definitely see sort of a mercenary anti-hero that doesn't want to get too attached, is always on the run. I think about the Incredible Hulk series and Bruce Banner, you know?
That one, yes. I was thinking Hulk. I was thinking a little bit Hulk about, you know, just the guy who rolls in the town and you know him, and he's that one guy, and then all of a sudden this mysterious warrior shows up and kicks some ass, and then the mysterious warrior is gone, and then you're back with this one guy again.
Right.
He's not, you know, he's not going to spill the goods, but then there'll be a kid around who will, you know, he'll befriend the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
You know, all the tropes will be checked
out. Yeah. He's like, I work alone, kid. You wouldn't like me, Dottie. I'm a rebel.
Well, here's, you know, it's I really think that if you want to get an honest-to-goodness feel for what this series is going to be like, I would suggest you go back and watch the first Man With No Name film, A Fistful of Dollars, because I just am feeling a connection. The stranger arrives in the little town and all that stuff, and, you know, he proves himself. All of these things I think will play out in this series. And, of course, you have to keep in mind that A Fistful of Dollars was adapted from a Kurosawa film, Yojimbo. And I can guarantee you Dave Filoni knows this information, okay, and Jon Favreau too, you know. And, I mean, just having that connection there, you know, that takes you one step closer to Kurosawa, which, of course, was a huge influence on Lucas as he was developing Star Wars. So I think there's just too much in play here to not resist the chance to create a real Star Wars Western, you know, and use the Mandalorian as your man with no name.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a fistful of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it being this way. I kind of hope it is. And it what's interesting to me is I sort of read some of the early reviews of Star Wars Resistance, and what's being reported is that it's, you know, if you're looking for something that's going to really fill in the gaps of the Star Wars saga in a meaty kind of way, this is not your thing. And I have to say, I'm somewhat disappointed about it.
Yeah.
But when I see this, I say to myself, well, you know, I kind of don't care if this impacts canon or the Star Wars saga in any real meaningful way. And so I'm sort of like, well, I'm really torn about this. On the one hand, I have these expectations for the animated series that it follows suit with Clone Wars and Rebels, and that it does fill out the canon. And on the other hand, I'm looking at this incredible image of this man with no name Mandalorian that may or may not be Pedro Pascal. And I'm like, well, you know, I just want to see this guy in action. I don't really care what it does as far as canon is concerned. Though the fact that we know that it is set in between the fall of the Empire and the rise of the First Order, it does perhaps give us some hope that that story might be told in some way, obviously in the background. But, I mean, Jim, we saw how the Empire developed. There are a lot of fans. Occasionally I find myself scratching my head saying, well, how did this sort of Empire clone type organization, how did they find themselves on the rise to power just three decades after the, you know, wiping out the Empire? We don't really know that full story.
Right.
This could give us a sense of what it's like. Now, they do say in a number of these articles that it is likely that this character is going to be on disparate planets that we really have very little to or no connection to the New Republic as it's forming its new government in the aftermath of the Galactic Empire.
Yeah, you know, I think we might get like little tidbits about the formation of the First Order via both Resistance and the Favreau series. I think we'll get little tidbits, and we'll also find out information about the New Republic. I'm sorry if I sound a little distracted right now. I'm staring at this Mandalorian, and
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's about the gloves still.
No, it's not the gloves. This is a different thing.
Uh huh.
I'm looking at the visor, okay? That's just a reflection. It's not chipped. Okay, to me for a second, it looked like the visor was chipped at the bottom, and it sort of looks like it's scratched up on the upper left. Now, I can't tell if that's just reflection. I want to say it's reflection, but what if it's like chipped there at that part where you see at the bottom of the T on the visor? Do you see that white diagonal?
Hold on, I gotta get to the photo here. I want to get a Really good shot. Okay.
So I'm zoomed in.
Yeah, I'm zoomed in. All right, so where are we looking?
It's not chipped. Okay, on the visor itself.
Uh-huh.
At the bottom of the T.
Yeah.
Is that chipped and is that shadow we're seeing or is that part of the visor? Oh, I think that's part of the visor.
Yeah, to me it looks like maybe a reflection.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's got to be.
Very well could be a reflection.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to have a big mark there. That would kind of get distracting.
Yeah, it would get distracting after a while. It serves no purpose, and it takes away from the coolness factor. But you know, give me a break. I'm looking for anything I can here right now.
Now he doesn't. He doesn't have that. What's that? That side piece thing. I think it's a viewfinder of some sort or some sort of...
Oh, the range finder.
He doesn't have a range finder, which makes him look a little odd. Even Sabine had the range finder on the helmet.
Right, yeah. Yeah, maybe he just has it down and you can't see it on the other side.
Yeah, it could be, or he lost it. I mean,
yeah.
This guy looks pretty battle-weary.
He sure does. And I look at his leg armor, too, and that almost looks like something Dengar would wear. And... I can't help but think, just mere speculation, that this is he's the last of a breed that no longer exists. You know, I think the Mandalorians are completely abolished from the galaxy at the time that this guy is roaming the outer reaches. And, you know, Boba. And
you think so?
Yeah, because I think Boba was fairly unique for his day, you know? I think in that era of Star Wars... To see someone walking around in Imperial restricted space wearing Mandalorian armor, I think was very uncommon. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Boba, of course, became an agent of the Empire, an agent for hire, of course, depending on the job. But maybe that's how he was able to operate freely in the Empire without setting off any alarms. You know, like the Mandalorians are back. Because, you know, Palpatine wasn't going to humor that.
Well, but
the Mandalorians are not allowed to exist.
But Boba wasn't a real Mandalorian.
Right, but I get that. But just the fact that he's walking around wearing the Mandalorian armor, I think he became known for being that, you know. It wasn't like you would see the Mandalorian armor and say, oh, it's a Mandalorian. No, you would see it. No, oh, it's Boba Fett because he's the only cat wearing that stuff.
Right. Okay, I buy that. So Jim, if you had your way, I mean, what would you really like to see out of this series? Now, there's some things that are going to be really amazing about this. Is that because? And I'm going to make some assumptions here, but I'm going to assume because it's on a streaming service that the whole season will be released at once.
Maybe. There's been some debate about that. And
oh, really? You think they might try to parse this out?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people...
As opposed to like a Netflix-type thing where they do a season at a time?
It's getting more milk out of the cow, is what I've been told. That they can capitalize more on advertising.
Yeah, well, that's what Star Trek Discovery is doing.
Yes, but of course... Right. But of course... They are, you know, that's a situation where you're dealing with network executives of broadcast television, a broadcast network. So they're kind of set in their ways a little bit. And, you know, a company like CBS, they're still, I think, getting their feet on the ground and they're still clinging on to traditional broadcast methods. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they want to run it for a season, and a season to them means over a considerable amount of time. Weekly. But that's not quite the model that Disney might work with. They might take a completely different approach altogether and maybe release them in bunches or the whole season at once. Or, like you said, with the Trek series on CBS Online, weekly.
My vote is for... Give us the whole season at once.
Mine is too. And of course, Marvel has been following that method with their Netflix series.
Yep.
And that is the Netflix model.
Right.
And what do you look at is like who's sitting up on top of the mountain when it comes to streaming entertainment these days? I think it's Netflix.
Well, that's the Netflix model. Amazon Prime is doing the same thing, like with their Jack Ryan series.
Right.
With their Man in the High Castle series, with House of Cards.
What about YouTube?
House of Cards, YouTube, you know, I don't watch anything on YouTube.
Well, there's
other than YouTube content.
The Karate Kid spinoff.
All right. That was all once. That was all released at once as well.
So it seems like that's probably the more popular way of doing it.
Yeah.
And we've noted that there may have been attempts to fit the Star Wars release pattern to sort of mold it after the Marvel template. Mm-hmm. And maybe they might be looking at a similar approach here with Star Wars, like with the Marvel series. You know, the Daredevil seasons all get released at once. You spend a weekend binging it.
You know, one of my favorite shows on TV right now is The Blacklist with James Spader.
Yeah.
Okay. And what I really love about that show is I think it really straddles that line between a series that has a mythology, you know, a thread that's running through it, as well as just sort of enjoying it one-off, because in each episode... for the most part, they do have some episodes that are two-parters, but you got James Spader's character, Red Reddington, and he's helping the FBI hunt down some of these notorious criminals that they didn't even know existed. But there is that sort of thread that runs through the back end, and sometimes that overarching plot goes into the foreground, and sometimes it goes into the background, depending on the episode. I think it's a great model. I hope that that's sort of what we're looking at in terms of how this story is structured. I really don't want to see it just to be an episode by episode. I mean, I joke about it being like The Incredible Hulk. To my knowledge, you very rarely, if ever, sort of drew upon the happenings of a previous episode in the current episode of Incredible Hulk or even A-Team, for that matter, or Knight Rider. There might be reoccurring villains, but there weren't real consequences from episode to episode.
Well, of course not. And continuity isn't a factor with those old series.
Oh, not at all.
Not at all. The continuity is going to be a huge factor in this series. And I think with The Mandalorian, we're going to see a solid story here, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I think then the next step is going to be to evaluate the performance and the appeal of the show and say to themselves, well, what are we going to do with this character? You know, if he still lives by the end of the season, as long as he doesn't get killed off. But what can we do with this character? We can do a season 2 of The Mandalorian, or we could spin him off into his own film. And I think the live action TV series, or the live action series, I just quit saying TV, the live action series will definitely be a good breeding ground for some characters or some concepts or things that could be spun off into feature films. As we've heard, Star Wars is going to wrap up the Skywalker saga with episode 9, and the emphasis will be on new stories told in different parts of the galaxy with new characters. And I think the live action show would be a perfect breeding ground for content to fill those movies. And so maybe The Mandalorian will live beyond this season and he'll get his own film. So that, I think, would work out really nicely if, all the dominoes fell the right way. And you can then take the crews that have worked on these series and move them up into films. And, you know, maybe that's when Dave Filoni gets his big shot. Or, you know, maybe Jon Favreau is so married to the series that he sticks on. Starts directing live-action Star Wars. You know, Jon Favreau is a great director. And I'm really excited about the possibilities of this thing. Until I saw, just one single photo is really knocking me over here.
Well, because this looks like it could be from, from a Star Wars film. I mean, there's nothing in this photo that makes me go, ooh, I'm not so sure about this. Everything in this photo says, oh, show me more. Show me more. I'm ready.
Right. You're begging for more just looking at it.
Yeah.
And so what I wonder, though, is the series, The Mandalorian, I mean, are we dealing with just like, is that how they're going to do it with Star Wars TV? One season, one and done, and then the next season of the live action series will be something totally different. I think that could be a really great way to tell many, many Star Wars stories.
I don't think so, because these stories are reporting that this is just one of multiple live action live action series that are in the hopper and in development
Star Wars. I think it'll be a seasonal thing. And, you know, this is The Mandalorian,
a Star Wars series. You're talking about, like, what Ryan Murphy does with, what's that scary show? American Horror Story.
Right.
Right? Where every season it's different, right? Each season has a different plot, has a different, you know, different
Fargo,
cast.
True Detective, that's becoming sort of a way to do it. And I think Star Wars would be perfect for it. The Mandalorian is season one. Season two is Kenobi. Season three is
a question for you. How do we know that this series is not based on or not drawing from the Star Wars Underworld series that George Lucas was working on?
Well, I think it very well could be.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
Now, the timeline's different. Underworld was taking place between trilogies, prequel trilogy and original trilogy. This is between original trilogy and sequel trilogy.
But there could be concepts and story threads that get adapted. But, I mean, it is made clear that the series is being written by Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
So, so he's handling the writing chores and serving as executive producer. Whether or not he's actually going to be directing episodes, like, because it says the live action series is helmed by Jon Favreau. When you hear that, you generally think that means he's directing it. But we have several different.
He's the showrunner. He's running the show.
So,
He's the showrunner, and he's also the head writer. He's the guy that probably wrote the Bible. I think
he's the only writer on this thing.
I would be very surprised if this doesn't turn out to be very collaborative between he and Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni is also one of the producers. So I think Filoni's probably, if Favreau's as smart as I think he is, then I'm sure, whether formally or informally, had Dave Filoni's input on a lot of this stuff, I would hope. But here's a question, and this is sort of the obvious one, and I know they're trying to move away from the Skywalker saga and all of that, but this does take place in between the sequel trilogy and the original trilogy. What are the odds that we could see a Chewbacca, a Poe Dameron, a Luke Skywalker? I mean, Mark Hamill could certainly, look the way he did in some of those flashback scenes of The Last Jedi. Would they go to that well, you think?
Yeah. With Hamill, you just give him facial hair and have him keep that hood up the whole time, and it's solid. Yeah. A lot of people want Sebastian Stan to be the new Luke Skywalker. As a matter of fact, Paul Bateman was just bringing that up in the latest Star Wars Influences episode. Listen to it now in the RFR feed. Could we see those characters? How about Alden as Han popping?
Whoa, why would you have Alden as Han? This is between original trilogy and sequel trilogy.
You're not going to bring in Harrison Ford to play, because listen, I think from a little bit of information we did get about this series came from Jon Favreau himself earlier this year when he revealed that this series takes place within a handful of years right after Return of the Jedi.
This is Jon Favreau.
I actually wrote a lot of the scripts even before I had the job, to be honest with you. I wrote like four to show them what the show would be. And I've been thinking about doing this show for a long time. It's a part of the timeline that hasn't been explored yet. So it's about 7 years after the Battle of Yavin, so it's like after Return of the Jedi, before seven, right? And it's all new characters, different planets, and so a whole new piece of but also fits into the timeline.
Yeah, it fits into the timeline 27 years prior to the events of The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get Harrison at 78 years old. He's not that old.
All right. But what are you going to get, a 25-year-old?
Get Alden.
Alden?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But he's got to gray the hair a little bit.
Harrison wasn't gray in
they got to put some years on him. I mean, he looks like a kid right now. This has got to be post Jedi. But okay, but at the end of the day, are you thinking that it's possible that they could go to the well of classic characters and bring them into this?
Yes, like you'll see. Maybe a Dengar show up, or
Dengar.
I like Chewbacca.
Chewbacca. All right, okay,
Chewbacca's
could
a great
be a
one.
Chewbacca episode. I like that idea.
Yeah.
So they're saying 7 years after Battle of Yavin, which would put it about 4 years post Jedi.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Or okay. Well. No.
No, because there
would be three years after Return of the Jedi, because there was a 3 year gap between A New Hope and Empire.
And
there was a
right.
1 year gap between Empire and Jedi.
Okay. All right. So we're still looking at this is early days of the New Republic as they are picking up the pieces from the Empire.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Okay.
Oh,
all right.
I'm freaking excited for this.
It's awesome. I mean, and kudos to Jon Favreau for giving us not just that description, but then the beautiful production photo that went with it. It certainly has excited us here at Rebel Force Radio, and we are very, very much looking forward to all the news as it unfolds about The Mandalorian. Again, that will be part of the streaming service that Disney plans to release at the end of 2019. Speaking of Disney and speaking of Lucasfilm and Star Wars and all that jazz, we talked about this a little bit. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, what's wrong with you? This week we released an episode of Rush Hour where we talked about the news of Kathleen Kennedy's deal being extended for 3 more years as the head of Lucasfilm at the pleasure of Disney. Parent company. Kathleen Kennedy has reignited her lightsaber, says Star Wars reporter. I mean, Hollywood reporter, because they get all the scoops now.
Right.
The lead producer and architect of the Star Wars franchise has renewed her contract to remain president of Lucasfilm for another 3 years through 2021, the Hollywood reporter has learned. And this goes all through and talks about sources say that the future of Star Wars lies in television, which bodes well for the Jon Favreau-led series, as well as, of course, Star Wars Resistance. There's a new Indiana Jones movie that's being developed. And there's a whole lot of sort of background here, Jim. And this seems like a very anticlimactic kind of announcement. There's no quote here from Bob Iger. You don't hear anything from Alan Horn. You don't even hear anything from Kathleen Kennedy. It's just, yeah, we've learned that she has renewed her contract. In the way that it states it, that she has renewed her contract, makes it sound as though it was really up to her. It wasn't that her contract had been renewed. It wasn't that Disney has extended her contract. It was that she renewed her contract. So what do you make of that? You think that this was really Kathleen Kennedy's decision? Was this a joint decision? You know, there were rumors that Kathleen Kennedy, with the controversy surrounding the Last Jedi, and then, of course, the Solo not really lighting up the box office as it was projected to do. Does this you know, what does this mean exactly? Kathleen Kennedy, another 3 years. Good news, bad news, doesn't matter. What do you think?
What I think this means is that Bob Iger, who, yeah, here's the thing, Jason. Something that sort of snuck under the radar late last year, because we were all geared up for seeing The Last Jedi and all of that, something that sort of slid underneath the radar maybe a little bit was the fact that Disney extended Bob Iger's contract at the end of last year. They extended it to 2021. And Kathleen Kennedy's contract has been extended to 2021. Bob likes Kathy. Kathy has delivered for Iger. And he took the bullet for the Solo marketing and release debacle. And did so very publicly. And shortly after he did that in The Hollywood Reporter, it was reported in The Hollywood Reporter that Kathleen Kennedy had her contract extended for 3 more years. So I think it's being done in sync with Bob Iger. And two things could happen. When Bob is done, he's going to step down. And by doing so, he's going to leave the decision for Lucasfilm in the hands of his successor, who is going to continue to run Star Wars. Is it going to be Kathleen Kennedy? Maybe Lucasfilm will just get absorbed by Disney and Disney will produce Star Wars. But who's going to run the show? It could be Kathleen Kennedy, depending on whether or not the new regime would like to keep her on board. Another thing that I'm considering is the reason Bob Iger's contract is in sync now with Kathleen Kennedy's contract is because there's the potential Kathleen Kennedy will rise up into Bob Iger's position and be the head honcho of Disney. Now, she's a filmmaker. Bob Iger's a businessman. So I think that that might not necessarily be something that could be even something Kathleen Kennedy would want, but maybe it's something she's been getting groomed for over all of these years. Or she could just retire when he leaves and the new regime places their own person in charge of Star Wars and Kathleen goes off and continues running Amblin Entertainment with her husband, Frank Marshall. So that's what I really think is going on here. If you want to read between the lines, I think that Bob Iger likes Kathleen Kennedy, and he has made arrangements to make sure she is running Lucasfilm as long as he's at Disney, which is until 2021.
Yeah, that's some really good thinking. You're right. I mean, at first I was like, oh, wait a minute, I got to fact check you. That the contract for Iger was extended through mid-2019, but actually it was then later, that was as of March 2017, then in December 2017, as you had mentioned, it was confirmed that his contract would extend through 2021. Now we've got Kathleen Kennedy also through 2021. And actually, when Kathleen Kennedy, you know, her name has been thrown around as a possible successor to Bob Iger, you know, going back to, you know, the original acquisition of Lucasfilm. You know, I think some people forget that George Lucas appointed Kathleen Kennedy the head of Lucasfilm prior to the Disney acquisition. And so, you know, she came in at the pleasure of Disney. They could have gotten rid of her. They could have obviously just acquired the company perhaps in a more aggressive way and not sort of have it function on its own as a somewhat separate entity. But they didn't do that. They didn't do that. And right away, the rumor started, well, this is Disney not just buying Lucasfilm, but buying the successor to Bob Iger. You know, mm-hmm. Now if you're Alan Horn, right, you're thinking, well, what about me? Maybe. I don't know.
Well, who knows? I mean, we can't speak for any of these people. I mean,
no.
This is all just mere speculation. And I'm sure there's many candidates that are being put through the ringer.
But here's the thing,
I mean, this is a big position in corporate America to be taking over. And there's a lot of money at place here.
It's a huge position. And this would be my theory. Okay. So we're already sitting here towards the end of 2018. I would suggest that there's going to be at least a 2-year learning curve for whoever it is that is going to be appointed CEO of a company like Disney. I'm going to suggest that successor is going to be, whether it's publicly announced or not, doesn't matter, that successor is going to be working right alongside Bob Iger, probably starting in mid-2019 at the very latest, so that they're ready to fully take the reins in 2021. It's not like he's going to leave on December 31st, 2021, and the new person's coming in on January 1.
Or like a classified ad goes out, you know?
Yeah, that's not happening.
You know, hiring.
This person is going to be riding shotgun with Bob for some time. Now, there are others that are...
And hasn't Kathleen Kennedy essentially been doing that over the last 5 years?
I don't know. I think she's had her hands full. I don't think she and Bob are necessarily chatting up every day. I don't think she's been involved in the development of films outside of what's happening.
No, this is true. This is true. Yeah, this is true.
But now here's another thing, and some are saying, well, look, this is about letting Kathleen Kennedy wrap up her era of Star Wars. This is about letting her wrap up the things that she already has in production: the Mandalorian TV series, Resistance animated series, and the sequel trilogy. And once that is done, now you notice there haven't been any new projects announced.
Oh, everything's been put on hold.
Yeah, there's been a lot put on hold. There's further speculation that Rian Johnson, his trilogy is not happening. We're hearing from our sources that it is not happening. And, whether Rian knows it or doesn't is beside the point. We're hearing that it's not happening. So this could be just, all right, we need to make sure that she has the opportunity to wrap up all of these projects. And then we'll have somebody new in there that will handle the next, X number of years. It could go either way. No one knows. But you're wise to point out the fact that Bob took the bullet for Kathleen Kennedy. Now, did he really take the bullet for Kathleen Kennedy, or was he standing up and saying, in all seriousness, I was the guy that was putting Lucasfilm under that type of requirement of getting a film out every year?
That's what he was doing, and he deserves all the credit in the world for it. He didn't throw anyone under the bus. He wasn't looking for a scapegoat, and he likes Kathleen Kennedy, so he wants her there running Lucasfilm as long as he's there running Disney. And Bob's been fond of extending his contract over and over again, so it's stressful. It's got to be stressful and extremely time consuming to be a man in his position. So we'll see, if he still has fuel in the tank when, it comes time to talk about a contract extension, then we could be hearing about him being there till 2025.
Yeah.
he'll keep Kathleen Kennedy there because he likes her.
Well, one thing they've got to obviously be very, very considerate of the shareholders and their comfort level and making sure that there is a good continuity plan. That's for a company like Disney, they've got to be taking that very seriously, and I'm sure that they are. Whether it's Kathleen Kennedy or Alan Horn, who knows who it might be. But at any rate, Kathleen Kennedy still helming the Star Wars universe through 2021, says The Hollywood Reporter. I still find it a little weird that There wasn't more of a whoop-de-doo made out of that. But, you know, maybe they just want to get out of the way of the product. They've got lots of stuff in the hopper. They've got Episode 9. They have the Mandalorian TV series. They've got Resistance coming up this weekend. Who cares about the suits?
Yeah. And it probably comes down to Kathleen, you know. It's like, do you want us to run a press release? She's like, no, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, if it leaks out, whatever, but, you know,
right.
Whatever. She's signed, sealed, and delivered. So at least according to this story in The Hollywood Reporter. And there's no reason. Nobody has come out and said, you know, bollocks, that's not true.
Bollocks!
Oh, can I say that? We have people listening in the UK who like...
Oh, yeah. Is that like a... That's a real bad word, isn't it?
Well, you know, I guess it depends. It's a regional thing. To me, I'm an old school Sex Pistols fan, so it always worked for me. You know, I mean, they have an album with it. You know, so hey, we should probably just move on.
Okay. All right. Still to come, Clint Howard on the Dennis Miller option and in the cantina with Star Wars alum Rusty Goff and our pal Kevin Lyle. Before we get to that, I do want to talk about the reviews are in for Star Wars Resistance. It's premiering on Disney Channel this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Wow. That's an interesting time slot. But you know what? What do time slots mean these days? In the days of DVR, in the days of streaming, in the days of iTunes, time slot means absolutely nothing, really. It really doesn't. But the reviews are in. Here's some of the headlines. All right, TV Guide. Yes. TV Guide says, yes, Star Wars Resistance is for kids, but that's why it's interesting. Mm. Okay, CBR.com says, Star Wars Resistance is fun comfort food for franchise fans.
What does that mean? Oh, well, I guess we'll get into that.
We'll get into all of that. ScreenRant.com says, Star Wars Resistance premiere, a fun, straightforward, high-flying adventure. And... finally, who am I looking at here? Oh, our friends at Gizmodo, they say the first episodes of Star Wars Resistance establish a very unique and intriguing voice. So, okay, I'm just going to say that there are no real surprises in these reviews other than the fact the lengths that these writers seem to be going to in some ways... I hate to use the word apologize. I don't mean apologize, but excuse or downplay the fact that this is clearly a TV series, an animated series that is meant for younger children. Jim, you yourself have said, you know, I've got about as much expectation about this show as I did of the Freemaker Adventures.
Yes. Yeah, that is true. I'm going to change that perspective a little bit. That I think that this show will have something a little bit more to offer, because we will be getting information about the state of the galaxy during the time of the sequel trilogy. And we were talking about this before earlier in the show, how it's sometimes a little frustrating not being able to really grasp where this carbon copy empire came from and how they had the funds and resources to build a giant weapon destroying planet. Yeah. I'd like to know more about that.
Well, also, you're gonna know more.
And there's the concept that Starkiller Base is mobile. They can move that thing through space with its atmosphere intact and everything. You got to be kidding me. This is the type of crap I want to see. Okay, I want to see. Because
Wait. What do you mean?
Yes,
mobile.
Yes.
Wait, where was this established?
This is fact.
Where
this
was
is canon.
This established? What, canon right. According to who?
All right.
What, visual. Aftermath?
I got a visual guide here. Hold on.
It's a planet. It's not. I mean, they had that. They had that capability with the Death Star to move that thing around space. Starkiller Base. I don't believe Starkiller Base is mobile.
Here, I have the information here. I have the deets. I have the Starkiller deets here.
We get the blueprints.
Hold on. No, I have the book. The book is called
What Book?
The Force Awakens: The Visual Dictionary.
All right.
Now, hold on. I'm pulling up Starkiller Base information here. That's going to blow your mind.
All right. It's going to blow something.
Star Destroyers and stuff.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about some of these reviews.
But there, you know what? There are listeners out there who know they've seen this themselves.
Yeah, they're not flying. No. That is a planet. They're not flying that planet around. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That thing is not mobile. No one's getting in the cockpit of a planet.
It can jump to light speed, yeah.
No, it does. No, it does not. That's what made it different. No, that's what made it different from it's stationary, but it has the ability to harness the power of suns within a certain distance.
Oh no. This sucker's flying through space, man. It's heading right in your direction, too.
Man. I don't buy it.
I'll find that information, but I swear to God, I remember all of this stuff that I see, and I know I read somewhere.
You need to find this because I'm calling poodoo on this. But Star Wars Resistance, 6 months prior to The Force Awakens, that they are riding that really, really close. 6 months prior.
Remember somebody dug up that information. They were looking at the metadata on the website or something. You know, they were reading the code, and they saw that little blurb in the code, and then the page got deleted. But,
that has
been confirmed, though. That's six months,
6 months prior to the events of The Force Awakens. We've got your Poe Dameron in here. We've got your General Leia. So we've got this young kid, Kaz, the young, naive, and positively starstruck by the Resistance, especially Poe and General Leia Organa. So he gets discovered by Poe. Poe puts him, assigns him to this planet of the Colossus. It's a refueling station and an outer rim planet that's completely covered by water. Poe puts Kaz there as a spy. His job is to sort of ferret out those that are friendly to the Resistance and those that are on the side of the First Order. But while he's there, he gets caught up in all of these high-speed races. You got the Aces, and he takes up with these friends of his. And apparently, there's the series opens with a bit of confusion. You remember when Mr. Furley used to kind of overhear Jack and Janet and Chrissy talking, and there'd be like a big misunderstanding.
A lot of innuendo.
A lot of innuendo. Well, that's sort of like what happens with Resistance, is that Kaz's buddy, what's his name? Who's the alien looking dude there? What is his name? See, I don't know the names yet.
That's okay. We're applying a learning curve because you haven't actually seen the movie.
I haven't seen it. But at any rate, so Kaz's buddy, he misunderstands Kaz when Kaz says that he's going to be the greatest star pilot ever. Oh, Niku, that's his name, Niku. Well, Niku misunderstands that, and he believes that what Kaz is saying is that he is the greatest star pilot ever. And so that gets Kaz into some trouble, so all of a sudden he finds himself competing against the Aces. And the one thing, Jim, that I thought was interesting here, and I've got a number of these reviews, is, and I think it might be TV Guide that says that, well, this is a really great thing because there are no blasters in these first two episodes. Now, they only screened the first two episodes, but there are no blasters on the show. The only sign of a blaster that you see is an actual sign that is in the background of the cantina that says no blasters. So, you know, they compare this to the promotional image, the first promotional image of Rebels for season one, where they were all holding weapons, blasters, lightsabers, slingshot, the electro staff, rifle, hybrid. You had the stormtrooper helmet or head laying there. And what you got here in two episodes, literally no blasters, no lightsabers, no weapons of any kind other than some underwhelming ship-to-ship combat. Vehicles are only disabled. No one dies. Resistance may not provide the best fodder for those fan-made kill count supercuts. You remember when our old buddy back in the day, Jay Shepard, created that video where we were mourning the loss of all the people, all the characters that died in the
Yeah. It was like the death reel that you see at the Academy Awards. And you look at it and you go, oh, yeah, I remember that one. But it was all clone troopers. That's all it was. It was just clone troopers.
Yeah. So certainly we're talking about not a lot of violence, not a lot of action here. They do talk about the characters becoming... really the focal point. And strangely enough, one of the executive producers said that they looked at the classic sitcom Cheers for inspiration, because what they wanted to do is they wanted to see, well, how do you create a compelling series where the setting is always the same, that it never changes. They're always in the same place. Executive producer Athena Yvette Portillo, said that awesome. The challenging limitation was generative, because it allows you to delve into the personalities of everybody on the platform, and you get to know them. So, for example, the tough guy in the Colossus Cantina, where Kaz is stationed and doing his spying. This tough guy turns out to be a struggling small business owner selling gorgs in the open air market. And apparently gorgs are some sort of cross between a porg and a piranha. All right. So that's a gorg.
I'm sorry. I'm just like so quiet. I'm trying to just picture that in my head.
Yeah. Picture that one. You won't be able to unsee that.
I saw a picture of a little frog guy that somebody posted online. I think it was Tracy Canobio. She put up this little frog guy, who I think might be who you're describing. Oh, by the way, I added some information to our show rundown. Some information about Starkiller Base that I just found on Wikipedia. I'd like you, if you wouldn't mind, just go ahead and read the highlighted segments there.
Is this a big you were right kind of thing? Is that what I'm getting into? Is that what I'm walking into?
Well, no, I'm not. Well, I just want you to read the thing. That's all I'm saying. You know, I didn't say read between the lines. I just said read the thing, the highlighted stuff.
All right. Well, I want to get into some of this because they're talking about how having...
You're not going to read the thing?
I'm going to read the thing. I just want to finish my thought about these characters. So this is, again, coming from, this is TV Guide's review, and they're quoting Athena Yvette Portillo about how having all of this take place in the same location, the Colossus Cantina, allows them to really, really zoom in and hone in on these characters. So you got the tough guy in the cantina, who turns out to be a struggling small business owner selling gorgs in the open-air market, who just needs some help with his advertising. Now, if that doesn't say kids show, I don't know what does.
I was like, oh, wait, how is Swank going to analyze what he just read? that doesn't sound like a kid show. Sign me up. It's almost like, George is like, yeah, I'm making Phantom Menace for the children to all enjoy. And then you're sitting in there, it's like, these trade meetings must continue. Yeah. It's like, what are they even talking about?
The thing opens up with the taxation of trade routes is in dispute. What? Was this NAFTA?
It says adventure and excitement. Like the taxation of trade routes.
All right, so these reviews are all but saying to fans, I think, if you're looking for Clone Wars, if you're looking for Rebels, move along. You're not going to find it here. Now, they do say that, look, both shows, Clone Wars and Rebels, evolved. Clone Wars went out guns a-blazing looking for a young audience, and what it really found was our generation introducing Star Wars to their children through the Clone Wars. That,
oh, my God.
That happened a lot.
You just read this in this article? Because that is such a true statement. And that was the most valuable.
No, that's
valuable,
me saying that. That's most, me saying that.
That was the most valuable aspect of the Clone Wars was the whole generation of original fans was old enough to really start building a family, you know, and had children under the roof who were old enough to consume pop culture and understand it. You know, they weren't watching the Teletubbies anymore. Mm-hmm. So you needed something to give them. And here we are with a theatrical experience based on Star Wars via the animated Clone Wars movie. When that hit theaters, it was like, yes, we have a Star Wars theatrical experience we can share with our kids. Now, of course, these are the hardcore Star Wars fans talking. Clone Wars animated film didn't do crap at the box office. It really didn't. But as the series started to develop, you really got to see how great the potential of it was. And I don't think in that theatrical film you really understood how great that series could be. Let's face it, the theatrical release was one of the weakest efforts in the entire series.
What do you mean? Who are you calling the weakest effort?
Well, Zero was great, you know, but it was kind of it felt patchwork. It didn't have a really great theatrical story.
Years later, after it hit theaters, I remember getting a text from my wife because she threw the Clone Wars Blu-ray into the machine for my daughter Bailey, who was probably maybe 6-7 at the time. And I got a text saying, Bailey just asked, why is Jabba's mom in this?
Who are you calling Mama Foo? We'll meet Mama later on in the series, and you're going to be blown away by her. Yeah.
I got to go back and revisit those Clone Wars episodes. So many people have been doing that in anticipation of the series returning next year. Yeah. And I really want to do that. I really want to binge the entire series again and watch it in that chronological order, because that was the most frustrating thing about the show in its initial run was things were being presented to us out of order. And it was like, we're supposed to know this? Yeah. There was never any guidance, you know?
That was all George. The people don't care.
Yeah,
we're not going to know. Yeah, George, I think we really should start doing this in order. It's really getting confusing. I don't know. I don't care. Hey, remember that episode we did last week? Well, let's do another episode this week, but it's like, you know, 2 hours before that episode. Let's really screw with them.
All right, listen. I want you to make a Darth Maul and make him yellow, okay?
Really, should we do that?
Just do it!
All right, George, we made your yellow Darth Maul.
Well, I'm going to bring Maul back.
Wait, what? We just made a new one.
All right, Maul's back.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey,
make this one his brother.
I don't know. He's got the spider legs. Crazy.
Well, you know what, though? This is the Star Wars Resistance is getting some, it's really getting the full Star Wars treatment because it's getting its own line of action figures. And that was something that a lot of us were thinking, well, what's a Star Wars show without some action figures? Mm. Rebels had it. Clone Wars had it. Even the Forces of Destiny had action figures. But there was no sign at the announcement and even at Toy Fair that this was going to be a reality. But New York Comic Con, this is just hot off the press here. CNET.com has, I believe, the exclusive that Hasbro has revealed. Star Wars Resistance action figures that will be available in the spring of 2019. So probably as the first season wraps up, those action figures will be hitting the pegs. Some interesting designs. Certainly kind of, what do they call that? A shonu? What's the name of that? Not shonu. What's the name of that? It's anime, but it's a certain style of animation, kind of in that Voltron meets not Johnny Quest. What's the Speed Racer? What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. The word I've been hearing a lot of people use in relation to the animation style is anime. And I don't really see much anime, especially in these characters once they've been translated into action figures. But just by, you know, what little we've seen of Resistance. And by the way, I do want to say that the more I see of this show, the more cool stuff I'm seeing. You know, expecting, of course, you know, like I said, something along the lines of the Lego Freemaker show. Not much meat on the bones for adult fans, but there'll be little things we can pick out of this. I hope there is. It's more substantial than the Forces of Destiny. You know, I don't want any sort of canon being introduced in things like Forces of Destiny because it's just so lightweight and fluffy. But this show, we're going to be following these characters along and watching them develop and getting little tidbits that do relate into the legitimate Star Wars cinematic universe. And I think that's going to be really cool. And up until today, I mean, what a great day today's been with the reveal of the first photo of the Mandalorian just knocking my socks off. And now seeing all these great 3¾-inch figures, I wasn't even considering action figures for Resistance, but now I can't wait. This gold First Order Stormtrooper, Commander Pyre, a First Order Stormtrooper outfitted in a black and gold armor. I love this. I was so blown away back in the 70s watching that original Battlestar Galactica series, and all of a sudden they introduced a gold Cylon. Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. There was an exclusive action figure you could mail away for, just like with Star Wars. The gold Cylon. Do you remember that? Did you watch the original Battlestar?
I remember my brother watching it, the original Battlestar. But I got to say this gold trooper, I'm not, by the way.
I love the gold trooper.
My papers. Shonen, that's the style.
Oh yeah,
Shonen. So it's along the lines of the new Voltron, Avatar: The Last Airbender, Ben 10, and what else? The Speed Racer remake.
Oh yeah,
that they did.
Gold Trooper.
Gold Trooper. I feel like this is sort of the modern version of the black trooper. It's like, well, we had a white one, let's make a black one. And it's well, we had a silver one, let's make a gold one.
Oh, it's gold.
So this is a little me too.
Listen,
here with the
old school fans.
Phasma.
Old school fans like me who remember that gold trooper in Battlestar Galactica, you know what I'm talking about, how cool that was. And plus, here's where you see, if you have any doubt that Dave Filoni had something to do with this series, you have, you know, The Pittsburgh Steelers black and gold here showing up again. He does that every series, doesn't he? He had the Goldie R2 unit, Goldie.
Yeah.
And then what did he drop into Rebels that was suspiciously Pittsburgh Steelers oriented in color? And now we have the golden black trooper.
Well, that big moose thing looked just like Roethlisberger if you look in at the face.
The moose.
Yeah. Yeah, Bendu Roethlisberger, I think was the full name.
All right, your Cleveland Browns fandom is showing.
Hey, we finally got a decent quarterback, I think.
Oh, you got stuff going on over there.
Yeah, I think we got some stuff going on. I'm not, you know, this Mayfield guy.
Yeah, bring back the Browns. It'd be good for the NFL.
Yeah, cardiac kids. All right, we've got, as promised, Rusty Goff showing up here in the cantina in just a little bit with Kevin Lyle. But before we get there, we do have these clips of solo director Ron Howard's brother, Clint Howard. He was on with Dennis Miller. And do you remember Dennis Miller, right, from Saturday Night Live? Jim, what do we got here? Why was Clint on with Dennis Miller, and how does this relate to Star Wars?
This is from Dennis's new show, The Dennis Miller Option, and he just had Clint on as a guest, and it seems like the two of them go back a ways, you know, and everyone knows Clint. He's Hollywood's little brother, Clint Howard.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Remember, he was with a little... what was that show? Little Ben or with the bear?
Gentle Ben.
Gentle Ben.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he was in the Trek.
Well, yeah, he was the
right. What was the portal to nowhere or something? I forget what that was called. He had the big head, the little baby body.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was I've got the action figure actually from Playmates.
Clint showed up in a few episodes of the old Andy Griffith show.
He
of course makes cameo appearances in every one of Ron Howard's movies. He's one of Ron Howard's good luck charms and an all around great guy, Clint Howard. So Clint was on talking to Dennis Miller, and of course, you know, Dennis brought up Star Wars, and he was just wondering, you know, George Lucas, Ron Howard, they both go way back. So how did George react when he got the news that Ron was finally going to sit in a Star Wars director seat?
Now, Ron had worked with George on American Graffiti, and George is actually Ron's kind of mentor. In fact, Ron called George when he took the job with Solo, and Ron said that the first thing that came out of George's mouth was, "Well, I told him to hire you in the first place."
I absolutely believe that.
Right.
In fact, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Ron Howard was George's original choice to direct Episode 7.
Yes. I think we're on to something here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as you know, as you hear, George was Ron's mentor when it comes to filmmaking, of course. You know.
Yeah. I believe it was George that told Ron to go to USC.
Here we have Clint continuing to talk about Star Wars. They don't really get into Solo or anything. It's not like Dennis Miller's going to start nerding out about...
Baylock! Baylock was the name of the... Yes, it just came to me.
Oh, yeah.
He was Baylock.
From Star Trek.
Original Star Trek. Yeah, right.
So Clint tells a great story. I've never heard this before. But as you know, when the casting call went out in the mid-70s for Star Wars, just about everyone went in there to read for the roles, you know, be it Luke Skywalker or Han Solo or whatever. And so Clint passed through the doorway, you know, and he went in there and actually had an audition for the original Star Wars in the 70s. So here he is, Clint Howard, telling Dennis Miller a story about what it was like to audition for. So we got to look and try to find if Clint's audition is online. I think we would have heard about it by now, but there's some bootleg stuff out there that needs to be combed through. Somebody needs to look for a young Clint Howard trying out for a Star Wars role. But here he is telling Dennis Miller what it was all about.
So I walk into the room, and Francis Coppola is in the room. Now, Francis Coppola is a room, and I don't mean that he's heavy. He's just, he's got a presence about him. And my eyes, I'm 18 years old. I'm trying to get an adult part. My eyes are just immediately drawn towards Francis, and he's smiling at me. And there's a guy named Gino Havens, who I knew, who had worked on American Graffiti. He was there. George was turned around in a director's chair, a leather chair, not director's chair, leather chair, and he spun to face me. And the first words out of his mouth were, "Commander Baylock, Corbinite Maneuver." That was my character and the name of the episode of the original Star Trek that I did.
Oh, no, he knew it right away. That's so cool.
And I remember thinking, George, get a life. you probably get this. You know how bad that threw me off?
Yeah, a little
weird.
To have
a child reference. I mean, here I am trying to be a big boy. I'm a kid, but I'm going in. I'm reading for a role.
Coppola's in the room.
Coppola's in the room, and he's talking about me playing this when I was 6 years old, playing this little alien. Get a life!
Right. It's like your mom bringing out your nude baby pictures when you bring a date home in your 20s.
I got to bring that to his attention when they had this Solo premiere here, because they invite George, even though he sold and he cost Disney several $1 billion or $1 trillion or whatever. They still invite him, and he still stands around. And I he didn't really remember, but I told him, and he did chuckle because he was a Star Trek geek.
You know, there's always been, not rumor's not the right word, but there's always been little droplets of information sprinkled throughout George's history that he was a Trek fan. And when he's been asked about it specifically, he'll say, oh, I remember when it was on. It was very different from anything. And blah, 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 blah. But he doesn't, you know, he doesn't nerd out. But the I totally buy this story. I buy this story because there's another side of George. And who was it, Jim, that we had on that told us the story of seeing George's comic book collection?
Oh, that was Tony Baxter, who was a Disney Imagineer and the guy who basically Star Tours, the original Star Tours, was his brainchild with George Lucas.
With George. And so George, like, takes him in this, like, secret room. It's like his panic room.
Yeah.
And, you know, I picture it looking like a comic book shop with, you know, the long boxes and stuff hanging up on walls. And, you know, they're looking at Scrooge McDuck issue number 5 or whatever they're doing. They're like totally nerding out.
It's like a room out of Michael Jackson's Neverland, you know?
Yeah.
He said, oh, why don't you come on into my other room and I'll show you all my stuff. And he had, in this room, there were his comic books and some little toy car models. And then he took me over to his drafting board where he was drawing up the recording studio, the Vineyard recording studio they have up there. And it was for that 1 hour, it was like, wow, we could be friends. You know, it was like one of those like moments where you go, if I could get to that stage, then you could start saying, well, here's an idea, or like, what have you thought about this? Or anything.
Yeah, look at my comic books. Let's talk about Uncle Scrooge.
He did. He had this like office just off of his main office. And so you cruise in there, and I assume this is at the Bain house at Skywalker Ranch. And in there, he had all of his stash. It was his comics and all of his fun stuff. But then I think it kind of ended in a sad way where George sort of looked at Tony and, you know, Tony was maybe reaching out to him. And George said, listen, I can't have more friends. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
George said to me once, we were somewhere, and he goes, you know, I have so many pressures for my time. I really can't allow myself to get any more relationships going with friends and stuff. He says, it's really kind of sad, but I just don't have any more time. And so I think it was a way of sort of saying, you know, I really enjoy being around you professionally, but, you know, I just can't, you know, because your dream is like, hey, we're going to be best buds now. You know, you kind of felt, you know, that he was pretty good about sort of establishing, you know, the limitations of just approaching him, because otherwise, you know, and I can understand where his vulnerability would be if, you know, just every single nice person that he met got to be in the circle.
I mean, when you're a bajillionaire and in charge of this media empire, it's,
Well, I mean, Tony's thinking like, he's getting all caught up in the moment. He's like, I'm really connected with this guy. I mean, we like the same stuff. You know, I gave him my number. Hopefully he'll call me tomorrow. And George's like, yeah, I have too many friends as it is. But at any rate, the fact is I buy this story that, you know, George was a geek. He was a nerd, and he looks at Clinton Howard. First thing out of his mouth isn't, oh, yeah, I worked with your brother, you know, or how's Ron? No, first thing out of his mouth, Commander Baylock, Corpomite Maneuver.
I like how he turns around in the chair like he's Palpatine. You know, he's like the Emperor. That's probably where he got the idea for that.
Oh, the fact you remembered the character and the name. This is before home video. I mean, the fact that he knew this, he had an episode guide. Yeah, an episode guide that he subscribed to some fanzine.
Get a life!
Oh, by the way, I have that Wikipedia information there about Starkiller Base.
Will
you just,
I forgot
please,
about that. All right. You sent this via email?
Yeah. No, I placed it onto the show notes under the John Favreau Instagram thing, the Mandalorian, underneath that. It says Starkiller Base info from Wikipedia.
All right, here we go.
Now, we're talking about, like, can Starkiller Base move through space? And I say it's been flying all over the place. You say, no way. That's crazy talk.
Well, according to Wikipedia, Starkiller Base was a mobile, forested ice planet rich in kyber crystals that was located in the unknown regions.
That's right.
The Forest Order.
The Forest Order.
What did I say?
Don't read that. Just read the highlighted stuff.
Oh. Well, wait. Well, but maybe you're just wanting me to read the stuff that backs up your idea.
Well, no, that's the only information that's relevant to the conversation.
All right. The mobility was provided by rocket ports on the far side of the base. I still say that's ridiculous. What evidence in the film do we have that this thing moved around? Did this happen in the film?
Well, there were certain times when General Hux's hair was like all windblown, and it's
no, he wasn't, no, this, you know, is,
there's that one scene where like his hat just blew right off his head.
No, this is a bunch of crap that's made to fill out the story and to make excuses for something else. I'm not buying this at all. It was on a planet. Otherwise, it's just the Death Star again. If it's something that flies around space and can blow up planets, it's just the Death Star. I thought the thing about this was that it was stationary, but it was so powerful because it could pull power from some of the nearby stars.
Suns. Yeah, suns. Well, that's how, right, it would get its
stars power. Are suns, by the way. Suns are stars.
Well, when our heroes were on their mission there, Han, Chewie, and Finn, they were going there to rescue Rey.
Yeah.
They witnessed the sun disappearing, and it got dark, remember? Because Starkiller Base drained it.
It does, right. And then the star becomes, you know, supernova. I don't know, whatever it does, but it destroys it, yes.
So I think people were trying to justify that by saying, well, that's it, you know, once it drained its sun, it wouldn't be able to fire again. However, we've seen time and time again that it's not uncommon for planets to have two suns, Tatooine and Octu. So maybe Starkiller Base, we only saw it fire once, so maybe that was sun number one. And then it drained sun number two to fire on Dakar and the Resistance. And then that's all they would have needed to have done. It would have been over. All right, they blew up the New Republic home planets. They blew up the Resistance. So that's it. So now they can bail from Starkiller Base, get on their Star Destroyers, and go overthrow the whole galaxy. That's the plan. So it's really unnecessary to make Starkiller Base mobile when you could just say, well, it had two suns. It had access to two suns, and it only needed to fire twice anyway.
Well, who's to say there's only two? There could have been three. And I thought that the way they explained that was that it has the ability to reach out and grab from, it doesn't have to be its own local star or local sun. It could reach out into to others as well.
Yeah, it was able to fire its weapon through hyperspace.
Yes.
So using that technology in reverse, you'd think, well, you know, we could just be sitting here on Earth. We're on vacation. You know, you're sitting there on Waikiki Beach. And all of a sudden, like, oh, no, the sun is gone now. And I've paid all this money to come to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's, so I'm going to spend my last day of existence in darkness. Great. Ah. Great. Wonderful. Wonderful. Nice vacation.
Perfect.
You know, travel agency didn't even mention this could be a possibility. So that's, you know, how things happen in the Star Wars galaxy. You have to understand when there are these horrible, oppressive empires in play with their super weapons. So, we're saying that's non-RFR canon, then.
Yeah.
Mobility. It's unnecessary.
It's unnecessary. It makes no sense. There's no way you could have a planet just propelling itself through space. Come on. All right. Let's go into the cantina. I'm a little thirsty myself. We've got a very special guest this week, Kevin Lyle, and he's bringing his friend, Rusty Goff. He is an alum of the original Star Wars film back in 1977, A New Hope. Rusty Goff joining us right here in the cantina on Rebel Force Radio. Star Wars, Star Wars.
you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
All right, joining us now in the cantina, Kevin Lyle. How's it going, Kevin?
Hey, it's going great. How are you?
Good, good. Now, we have you here, obviously, because you're a buddy of ours, and we like talking to you, but you have so much stuff going on. Before we bring in our special guest, just wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the things you have going on at New York Comic Con this week.
I have two different booths going on. I'm, of course, managing the Norse Legion booth, which I'll have employees running that for the most part.
Yes.
But I'm proud to announce that I'll be working with Pozu, which, of course, is the Star Wars shoe company based out of London. And I'll be running some of their American operations here in the future. And we're going to have some great styles. I mean, I'm sure some of your viewers are listeners.
Yes.
That's right, listeners. Some of your listeners might be aware of Pozu's background. They have a lot of great shoes. And, you know, they had the BB-8, they had the awesome pork shoes, which my daughter loves. And then they're actually doing an exclusive launch at New York Comic Con. It's the Rebel Combat Mid-Cut boot, which is this great boot they have. And, you know, you can either Google search that or you can go on my Facebook page and probably see it. And we're going to be selling those for the first time ever at booth 302 at New York Comic Con. Which is on the far left side of the building as you enter it. It's the same place we were last year, actually. And so that it's going to be great. But like you said, you know, all the panels and the backstage stuff, I'm not going to see any of it. I'm going to be so busy with these two booths that I won't have any time. It'll just be Star Wars product, and maybe if I'm lucky, something to eat.
Well, that's uncommon for you because often you're the guy who's on stage conducting panel interviews and stuff like that. And but you're going to be doing the Pozu thing, and I really am impressed with the type of shoes Pozu is creating for Star Wars fans now. The boots especially are really clever. One looks like Luke Skywalker from A New Hope, where he has the wrappings around the boots.
right.
That's cool.
And those are similar to his boots in The Last Jedi as well. I don't know if you noticed, his boots are kind of similar to that.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
A different style, but it's just, you can see there's a little bit of a homage to it.
Right.
And it's, you know, that's a really cool design. All their quality's good too. You know, these aren't, you know, $25 pair of shoes. These are really, you know, high quality, but for a great price.
I am a big fan of the Han Solo. The men's shoe, it's black. It's a black gym shoe.
When I started working with them, I wanted to do some design work with them, of course. That's what I do. I've been doing it with jewelry, doing a lot of things. And I saw that, and I was like, damn, I wish I thought of that. That was a great idea. That Han Solo shoe is just awesome looking.
It's a high top with the Carillion blood stripe running up the back. That's pretty sharp. That's pretty sharp. I might have to add that to my wardrobe. But good stuff from Pozu. POZU.com is where you want to go for all things Pozu Star Wars. So cool. And then, of course, you have another convention on the horizon, and that will feature you up on stage conducting interviews and panels at Super Mega Fest. It's coming October 13th and 14th, and it's hitting the beautiful state of Massachusetts. And there you're going to be doing all kind of stuff. What do you got going on at Super Mega Fest?
There I'll be there with my good buddy. Are we allowed to say his name yet? Because he's in the cantina.
Well, it's no big mystery.
And it's Rusty Joff, the famous Jawa and Gonk droid from Star Wars A New Hope, and he was one of the original Oompa Loompas.
I have all of his credentials here. Let's get Rusty on the line with us right now. I'm going to add him to this call. Rusty.
Hi.
Hey, there he is. How you doing, Rusty?
Yeah. Yes. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Good to have you joining us here on Rebel Force Radio. I'm Jimmy Mack, and it's a pleasure to meet you. I've been a fan of yours for 40 years. And
yes, exactly. Long time.
And so,
how you doing, Rusty? It's Kevin. I'm here, too.
Hello. I'm all right, mate. Very well. Yes, excellent. I had a good day. It's been sun shining. It's lovely.
All right, Rusty, let's run through your credentials. True or false, you were a Jawa.
That's right.
Power droid.
True.
Oompa Loompa.
Oh, yes.
A goblin in the...
Yes.
And Britain's bounciest weatherman.
Did you have to say that? In fact, I was at a dinner last night, And a guy came up to me and said, yeah, hey, you're Rusty Goff. I just said, yeah, I used to work at the television station where you done that Vincent Bouncy Weather. It was unbelievable. What a small world. There you go.
So you were the bounciest weatherman, and they put you on a little trampoline. You delivered a weather report here. I actually have a vintage recording of you from Yeah, this is from Britain Cable. Here's Britain's bounciest weather.
Hello, yes, it's me, your bounciest weatherman, Rusty Goff. Yes, it is still cold because the cold, chilly winds are still with us. Up in Scotland, though, although there's a frost in Argyll, it's the best chance of sun, but there's still a bit of wind and temperatures are only getting to 16 degrees Celsius. This is your bounciest weather forecast, Rusty Goff, signing off.
What year did you do the bouncing
weather? Oh, God, yes, that was round about. My wife sitting next to me, we're trying to work this out.
Must have been late 90s, early 100s.
Yeah, late 90s, early 100s, yeah.
Early 100s? Is that what that decade's called?
No, early 20s, early 20s, yeah.
Early 100s, I like that. I never heard it called that.
And so that was on a briefly lived cable channel called Live TV or
well, yeah, it was a super channel. Every program was either 1 minute, 2 minutes or 5 minutes long, and it's very strange people. They had a weather a Norwegian lady doing the weather in Norwegian, and they wanted something else, so they got me in as the dwarf bouncing on the trampoline, so freaking the weather.
So they said when you got to the top of the country, you'd be exhausted by that time.
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, I was up in Scotland. I used to jump the highest. I'd go, up in Inverness! And believe me, guys, that was 2 years past itself by a day. People loved it. It was absolutely fantastic.
Well, that's a lot of fun. But what we're here to talk to you about is, of course, Star Wars. And,
Star Wars, yes.
I want to dig up some stories from you if I can. First off, how did you first hear about Star Wars? Obviously, a lot of actors out there in England heard the call. Were you summoned by a talent agency or anything like that?
Yes, as it was by my own agent, which I had at the time there. He was approached because they wanted a couple of little guys. And the late Kenny Baker, God bless him, he was already earmarked for R2-D2. And his partner at the time, they did a double act variety, vaudeville double act, Jackie Purvis, another late guy, unfortunately, passed. And it was just us three in that first ever Star Wars, which was only going to be one movie, just called Star Wars. But then they made a few bucks, and here we are, $48 billion down the line, you know. But it was really good to do. It was fun. No one knew what the hell was going on. No one knew how big it was going to be. I tried out for R2-D2, but I was a bit big. So did Jackie Purvis, Kenny's partner. He tried out, but he was a bit too big. So
what was the tryout like? What did they have you do?
They just lifted you up and put you in this dustbin.
in the garbage can.
The trash can.
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah. Did the trash can resemble the R2-D2 we see in the final film?
Yes, it did. It was just like a white trash can. They had the feet on it because you had to put your legs in the feet and try to move the thing. Mm-hmm. But then they added all the red and blue, the bleeps and everything, all the lights on it afterwards. But Jackie and I, we never fitted in it. But Kenny just slid into it beautifully. So he got the part. There we go.
And then there you go. But they said, hey, stick around because we have some other characters you might be able to. So was the Jawa the first character they approached you with?
Yeah, that was the first character they brought me in. Yes, they put me, first of all, they said, sit down, and they put these flashlight bulbs on my cheek, Scotch taped them on, and the wire was going on my head to a battery pack at the back, and they put this black cloth over my head and stretched it, cut a couple of slits in it, so these flashlight bulbs could see through. And then over that, they put electrical tape to hold the cloth in. So, you know, we're not talking comfort here.
No, not at all.
Then they shoved this old potato sack over me and they said, that's your costume. You are a Jawa. Yeah.
So you were all packaged up into this outfit, and they shipped you off to Tunisia. And so when you were out there,
we never said anything then in those days. All the Udini, that was added in later on the remaster, on the master remaster when they redid it.
Right.
But people said, which I didn't know, and people were saying to me at some Q&As I've done in these conventions, they said, say the words you said. And of course, I never knew, I know who you said. Go, please, say what you said. I said, really? They said, yeah, say it, please. I went, okay. Ouch, itch, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, get that, ooh, ah.
Wow, that's amazing how the cuckoo clock kind of works in concert with you like that. Do you go to the panels?
Yeah, I've got a lovely German cuckoo clock here. One, no, it's going to be another hour yet. Hang on. So say the words. I went, out, ooh, out, get down, ooh. They said, no, you're a teeny. I said, what the hell's that? I'd never heard it. I didn't know till the remaster.
Well, that was courtesy of the work of Ben Burt there at Skywalker Sound. And in his wizardry. But so being out there, do you recall how long the shoot was? How many days you were out there shooting the Jawa sequences?
I think I was on there for about four weeks.
Wow.
I know I nearly killed the star of the show, Sir Alec Guinness. A sequence where he comes in with Luke Skywalker into the cantina downstairs. George Lucas said to me, Rusty, I want you, when Sir Alec's coming, I want you to go onto his right side. Just zoom out the door. I said, okay. But then the first assistant director said to me 20 minutes later, hey, Rusty, I want you to go around the right side of Sir Alec and out the door. I said, okay. So I thought, what should I do? I thought I'd go on the second direction was, because they might have rewritten it. So I went on the right side. So Alex thought I was going on the left side, so we nearly collided. Well, we did collide and move, you idiot.
He said, did he really? You got voice. Called an idiot by Sir Alec Guinness? Is this true?
Yes.
He was, oh, my God.
He was a charming gentleman.
Well, very charming, yeah.
But then afterwards, after it explained, this was like a double thing, and I was told two things. He came up to me and apologized. I'm so sorry, dear boy. You did the right thing. There we go.
Wow. So brush with greatness right there.
I do, Kevin. I do brush with greatness. Yes, brush with it. Yes.
Let me just, you know, I'm impressed just to hear you telling stories about working with George Lucas. But, of course, Sir Alec Guinness came in there and he, you know, George wasn't famous when you were working with him.
No one knew who the hell they are. And the late Gary Kurtz. What a shame. Gary's just passed recently.
Yeah, right.
And yeah.
A shame. What a lovely guy Gary was. You know, I'd done a few events with conventions with Gary, but a lovely guy. And also his daughters. George and Gary, they were unknown. I said, we didn't know who these people were, but they had great ideas. And they had some magic, which all the crew adhered to them. They liked these two guys. They liked it. So it was so cheap. It was really so cheap doing it. And the guys didn't mind it because they liked working for these two guys.
Really?
George and Gary.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because I've often heard that Lucas had to deal with a lot of resistance from the British crew. And they thought what he was doing was silly, and they just didn't get it.
Everyone thought it was stupid. What the hell are we doing?
I guess when
he had this vision, and by God, what a vision. You talk about the power droid, the Gok droid.
Yeah.
How that costume came about. I was walking to the studio one day across the parking lot, and the special effects guys came up to me and said, Rusty, bend over. So I said, just bend over. And they put this polystyrofoam water cistern on me. And they went, can you walk? So, you know, I couldn't see where I was going. Well, yeah. Okay, I'll see you on the set. So they came with this polystyrene up to water cistern, these corrugated plastic tubes, which they used for air conditioning. They made some cardboard shoes. And they put all this on me and called George over and said, look, a character we've invented. And George said, wow, yeah, we like that. I'll get one of my children to name, because one of his kids used to name these creatures. So there we go. That's how the Gonk Droibers happened. Just walking along the corridor.
Wow, interesting. The power droid. So were you the only power droid to be featured in the original film?
I think so. In the first one, yeah. Then on the second, third, and then back to the first, I suppose. Yeah, they got other little guys in, because I only did the first Star Wars, which I always call it the first, but the number four, A New Hope.
Right.
That's the only one I did.
And you were there then on the Jawa Sandcrawler with Anthony Daniels and Kenny Baker as they were shooting their sequence there, because the power droid walks by. That's when you hear the gonk, gonk, and that's how he got his name. And so do you have any recollection, any memories about what it was like working with Anthony Daniels?
Tony was a nice guy, and also Mark. They were absolutely nice guys, really, really good. Because they're young kids, they didn't know. This was all swashbuckling, you know, love story, it's going to be good. It was happy. They were nice guys, nice to work with.
Yeah.
Nice to talk to.
And then you showed up once again in the cantina.
Oh, yes.
As...
Yes, I played the cabbie character.
Yeah.
Now, that character was played by an elderly little lady by the name of Gilda Cohen. She played that character originally. And how I got to do it, they did the master shot. She was right in the center of the canteen. They did the master shot. But I'd say about these costumes, they weren't made to measure. And this bat mask that she had to wear, there was no air. She couldn't breathe. And in this canteen, there's so much light, because there's no video invented, of course. It was all done the real film. And with the smoke and the heat, she just collapsed. She passed out because she was about 80 years of age.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So good. So then suddenly they had to take her off set. But they, they didn't have much money to make this movie, would you believe? So they took her off set. But they've already done the master shot with her in the middle. And I always remember these words, George Lucas, Rusty, get in the dress. So that was my first taste at cross-dressing.
Your first taste? Well, it sounds like it led to an interesting hobby for you, maybe, in the years to
come. No, don't be silly.
You said the first. Yes. So that means there was a second.
So, that's how it happened. And then you'll see on the movie, you'll see she's in the middle of the first shot, and it moves around to the side.
So, yeah,
that's me.
That's character Kabe, or Cabe, as some people call it. And is that you reaching up for the drink then?
Yes. I didn't have sound, but I was saying, give me a drink.
Make it a stiff one, please. But I guess long days on the set, you know, obviously. To kill time, would you goof around with other aliens and
we used to chat and say, what the hell are we doing here? Why are we doing it? Have you been paid yet? You know, simple things like that.
Yeah.
We are great. But as I said earlier on just now, that no one knew what it was going to be like. No one had any idea how big it was going to be.
Of course. And when did you get your first indication that you had contributed your time and skill to something that was going to be a mega hit?
Well, when I saw it, we were invited to the press and cast and crew screening. When I saw it, I mean, all the press, they just stood up and applauded when the spaceships come overhead from the behind you. They were absolutely gobsmacked. And from then on, everyone sat back, relaxed, and wow, let this come all over us. And it was fantastic. But going back to it, I started off in show business as a musician, and I've been thinking about this, and John Williams, who wrote the theme music, he was very clever at putting the first note of Star Wars in the last same note as the last note of the 20th century Fox logo. So you've got So that was straight. It was straight, it flowed.
Perfect. You know I mean. It was perfect. Yeah. Yes. It was, really perfect. It was absolutely perfect. So
yeah. And then suddenly the models came over your head. Everyone's ducking. And my God, we were now watching a swashbuckling love story film that was needed in that day and age. It was needed on the movies.
Now, how many people around you actually knew that you were a part of this movie? Is this something that was like people around you made a big deal about, or was it just like, we did it, and you just moved on?
We did it. We moved on. That's but 40-odd years later, I was in Star Wars. Wow!
Yeah, right.
A really big thing. As Kevin could tell you at events we've done together, people are really amazing. It's the only franchise that is still going and still means so much to so many people.
Right.
Is that right?
Mm. Yeah. Right. Now, you said you shot the film and everything and then you just moved on. When did it become obvious to you that this was something bigger than just a regular movie? Like, obviously years later, you became aware of autograph collectors maybe approaching you or...
I don't think it really got to me. I expected, because it was so good, it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you kept seeing it, Star Wars on the theatres, Star Wars again. And then when they made a few bucks and they'd done the other two movies, the trilogy... Star Wars. I thought, wow. Then they decided they're going to go back to the beginning and do episode one. Amazing. I'm proud that I was in that first ever movie or number four.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there any way we can identify which Jawa you are when we're watching Star Wars?
I'm about the third one that goes up the stairs of the Sandcrawler, carrying R2-D2. I'm the second one in.
Okay.
It's one of these. I should have had a label or a sign.
If I'm also not mistaken, when the guy who shoots R2, the Jawa who shoots R2, and he goes,
yeah,
Utini.
Jack Purvis, that was.
Utini, and the first one you see coming out in the from the bottom of the screen heading up. That's Rusty. That's right. He's right in the middle. That's him.
Yes, you're so right there, Kevin. Yes. I like Kevin. He's very good. He knows more than I do.
Years of stalking Star Wars celebrities has just done me well. I know a lot about Star Wars.
That's why they have Kevin up there hosting the panels, is because he knows all kind of good stuff. And that's why we have him here with us, actually. So have you heard about people who make the trip out to Tunisia to visit the shooting location?
Yes, I met some people that do that. Here they are, make a fortune. It was all done on charter. Everyone went over on a charter aeroplane, and I think a lot of people were carrying pieces of camera equipment and everything else to do it.
Now, what was it like? What was it like for you though, when you went out there the first time to shoot it?
Hot,
yeah. Is it a place you'd ever want to go back to visit?
No.
So, doesn't it amaze you that people make these pilgrimages out to go see these original shooting locations and all you really...
I understand them. It doesn't amaze me because this is what these fans are like.
Sure.
Where will we be without the fans? There are so many thousands, millions of fans out there, and they are such lovely people. Long may they reign, long may they live. They go into cosplay of their favorite characters. You sit there and you see various Princess Leia slave girls walk past you, and various sizes of ladies and age, from young to 97. You go, oh dear. They love it because that was their favorite character.
Yeah, yeah. And do you find that when you're doing conventions and things, fans approach you more for Star Wars or more for Willy Wonka?
Well, I'm over in the States a couple of weeks' time. I'm going to Framlingham, Massachusetts, for Super Mega Fest.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to that. Sure. I think, Kevin, you'll be there, won't you?
Yes, I will be. I'll be there hosting your panel and a trivia contest as well.
Yes, we're doing that as well. Yeah, so I'm as I said, it's a Super Mega Fest at Framlingham, a little advertising there in Massachusetts. I'm over there. But I would guess, as we're getting near the fall, it will be Halloween, it will be mainly Oompa Loompa, because people, I've been told in the States, they hated those little orange creatures. The kids, their mothers used to say, if you don't go to bed now, I'll get one of those little orange guys at you.
Well, I was a little kid when Charlie and the Chocolate Factory came.
Excuse me, hold you there. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Willy Wonka, yeah, that's right. Charlie was the remake that Tim Burton did. And the Oompa Loompas were vastly different in that film, I thought, from the ones that that you had created in the original one from the 70s. So what was your take on those?
Our film had magic. And why we had, I'll tell you now, this is good. You're going to love this story. Why we had orange faces and green hair was because it was of apartheid. Apartheid.
Oh, well, that was a message I didn't realize that was coming through from the Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, when they were writing the movie, there was a knock on the door, and this guy comes in and said to the director and the producers, hey, I think you're writing this movie. Do you like the American accent? You're writing this movie. They said, yeah, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Okay. Is that the guy, that movie by that English guy, Roald Dahl? Yeah, Roald Dahl. Am I right saying in this movie, in this book, they've got the little black guys playing the pygmies? He said, yeah, little black guys. Yeah, I said, you can't do that. You can't use the black guys. Okay. He said, walking out the door, he said, turn around, and he said to Mel Stewart, the director, so what are you going to do about it? And Mel thought on the top of his head, he said, I'll give him orange faces and green hair.
Green.
Okay, you can make the movie. Oh, by the way, what are you going to call it? He said, as in the book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He said, you can't do that. Why not? Because Charlie was the name the black plantation workers gave the big white boss, Mr. Charlie.
Wow.
So you can't do that. Okay, I'll call it Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, shouted Mel. And that's how it became Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, orange faces, green hair, apartheid.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Holy smokes.
I didn't know that.
And then in the remake that Tim Burton did, it was all one guy.
Was there a remake? Was there? Did you say there was a remake?
I never saw
it. The different version.
Is there a different version?
Do you know the guy? Yeah. There was one guy who played an Oompa Loompa in the...
He knows him.
Tim Burton. His name's
Deep Roy.
Deep Roy. And,
American guy. I like Deep. He's a fantastic guy. Yeah, he played the Oompa Loompa. They pressed a button on the computer, and there's 3,000 of him. But that movie never had magic like our film Willy Wonka did. It had magic.
I agree with that. I have to
admit, a movie that came out around that time, I was, as a child, I was more frightened of Oompa Loompas than I was of The Exorcist. Something about the Oompa Loompas, that just that orange color, it just scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
It wasn't
every time they'd start with their song, Oompa Loompa, it would send chills down my spine.
It was very exotic.
That's why I love coming over to the States in Halloween time. People queue because they hate me.
Have you ever gone back and worn the makeup again just for laughs or a convention appearance or anything?
I love him. I love this guy. Just for laughs.
Just for laughs, you know. Just sitting around on a Saturday night, you know. I got nothing to do.
Yeah, you know. Let's go out, darling. Let's go down to the bar here. Yeah, I'll pop the orange face on, green wig, and get those white trousers on, the pom-poms on the shoe. Yeah. I'll get arrested and went as soon as I walk out my door.
So, I guess the answer is no, but you're thinking about it now.
No, yeah, that's the answer, no.
You're thinking about it now. I guarantee you're thinking about it. But
the only thing I'm thinking about is these showbiz auctions they have. They had a film auction a couple of weeks ago here in England, in London, at the British Film Institute, and they had a prop Wonka bar they were auctioning. And I thought, ooh, this is interesting. So I went down on the preview to have a look at it, see if it was a real one. Yes, it was a real prop. Okay, guys, and it was made of cardboard, you know, 6 inches by 4 inches, this prop, Wonka bar, cardboard. It went for £8,000.
Wow, holy crap. Yeah, I heard about that auction. They had Superman costumes that Christopher Reeve wore, and what was that, Johnny Depp with the scissor hands? They had his...
Yeah, they had that. They had a Harrison Ford jacket. It was amazing.
And so the Wonka bar was...
But I'm very pleased it went for £8,000 because I have two.
Yes! Yes! That's amazing. So, okay, so you took some Wonka bars here. Do you have anything from the Star Wars set? Any Jawa?
No, unfortunately, no, because there was so much rubbish walking around there on the floor, so much trash and everything else. No, I wish I did, you know. Oh. Nothing at all from the Star Wars sets, you know. Shame.
I think Anthony Daniels would go out to the garbage piles after shoots and pick a few things and...
Well, good luck to the man. I hope he did, because they will be worth a fortune.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, amazing. So you have the big convention coming up next week.
At Framlingham, Massachusetts.
Super Mega Fest. And you're going to be doing the panel with Kevin. Is there anything that you specifically think that Kevin should avoid talking about during the...
Sex.
What?
Sex.
What's
Did he say figs?
Figs?
You should not talk about sex.
Sex! Oh, S-E-X. Okay.
Yes, avoid it.
So, Kevin, there goes half your panel right there.
Yeah, I had this entire Jawa Oompa Loompa Harry Potter thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
That's out.
Oh, that's right, Harry Potter. So you were the bank goblin.
Yeah, in the last movie, Deathly Hallows Part 2, I was the chief bank goblin. Identification. There we are. I'm acting now.
Yeah.
That was it.
No, that takes me right back. So have you ever tried a butter beer?
I have. They're foul. There's so much sugar in it.
Yes, very sugary.
So much. It's horrible. So, I would like a nice cold Chardonnay instead.
So, yeah, absolutely. So the bank goblin does not endorse butter beer. But...
Well, let me put my acting hat on. Oh yes, it's lovely. Go out there and buy that, kids. It's absolutely gorgeous. You know, it's good for your diet. You go get that bottle of beer. Buy it by the gallon. Yeah, right. Okay, it's horrible.
So you said all of that while bouncing on a little trampoline.
Well, yes, I can do that. You know, I'm, at my age, I can still do that.
So have you been outside of doing conventions? Do you have any anything else happening as far as in front of camera?
No, I've retired a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because so many people my age were dropping down dead. And I thought, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do this. So I said to them, that's it, I'm going. But I thought, there's nothing I can say. What was your last thing before you retired? And I was just thinking that suddenly the telephone rang, and this gentleman said, oh, hello, is that Rusty Gold? I said, yes. He said, this is the BBC here. Would you like to do an episode of Doctor Who? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. So I did an episode of Doctor Who called The Robots of Sherwood, with the Doctor was Peter Capaldi. And that was that is now my swan song. I finished my career on Doctor Who.
And that had... That had some sort of Robin Hood tie-in, Robot of Sherwood?
Yeah, it was Robin Hood. They came down into Nottingham, and all the sheriff's men, were all robots.
Oh, and one more thing. I can't let you go without bringing up Willow. That's your other connection to the Lucasfilm universe. You were in Willow.
I was in that for 5 minutes.
Yeah? You were one of the villagers there.
I was one of the musicians.
Oh, okay.
I was in the band, yeah.
All right, so we'll be looking for you.
Along with Greg, along with Kenny Baker and Jackie Purvis.
Okay. The whole gang, all back together. Now, those guys actually were musicians. Are you a musician?
Yeah.
What do you play?
I was a musician, started off in show business as a musician.
Playing what? Like, what's your main instrument?
Well, I played about 30, 40 different musical instruments. You're kidding. Not at the same time.
Not the same.
Ranging from piano, keyboard, through to bagpipes, through to trumpet, through to guitar.
So you play bagpipes. Hey, do you know why bagpipers always march when they're playing? It's because they're not marching. They're trying to run away from the noise coming out of the bagpipes. Hello.
Love that. But you're right. You're so true. Yeah, no, I was doing a Christmas show in Glasgow in Scotland many years ago when I first started. And I had my keyboard up there and the trumpet. They said, do you play the bagpipes? I said, no. They said, if we got you a set, would you learn? Oh, yeah, for the show. So they got me this, half set of bagpipes because I was small. I couldn't hold the full set. And then they took me up to the woods outside of Glasgow so no one could hear the noise. And they started practicing for about a week. I could just about get a tune out of it. I think it was When the Saints Go Marching In, I think.
Wow.
Something like that. Yeah.
Amazing.
So there we go. That's how I started playing the bagpipes.
Amazing. Amazing. Is there anything you can't do? 40 instruments. I don't even think I can name 40 instruments.
I can't
amazing.
Swim.
You can't swim. Oh.
No, I cannot swim. No.
I don't think
you can play 30 instruments, but you can't swim.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he's 7 years of age, and that is a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Well, you are a Jawa, and there's no water on Tatooine, so no swimming.
Yes, but he does. But he does live on an island in real life.
Yeah. Well, now when I was 7 years of age, I my parents and I, my brother, we used to live along the sea in Kent, in a place called Herne Bay, and I was walking along the seafront one day, and these big yobs, as you call them, teddy boys, they picked me up and threw me in the sea just for a laugh, and that scared the shit out of me. I just couldn't, and I've been scared of the sea ever since.
Wow.
You know, I've always felt so, you know, my two boys, they're both short, they're both dwarves, and they swim like fish, you know. I wish I could, but I just cannot get into the water.
So what do you mean they picked you up and threw you into the sea? Were you out on a boat or in a pier or?
I was on the promenade.
Oh, okay.
They just threw me over the fence.
Just picked you up and chucked you right over.
It is not funny.
No, yeah, I'm not. It's not funny.
What the hell are you laughing for?
I'm not laughing. I just, there's no context for this. So you're just walking and somebody just came over and threw you in.
Yeah, for the fun of it.
We have to find these individuals and press charges on them. I think
Well, in those days you couldn't do that.
Could do that. You know, so they were attacking you. That was discrimination against you. Is what they were doing.
No, those days I'm talking about. We're talking about 60 years ago, 50, 60 years ago. That was it. There was nothing you could do about it. You know, some poor lady that was on the seafront, on the beach, she rescued me. Thank God.
Oh, my God.
I'm here talking to you now.
I don't mean to make light of it. I think that's a terrible story. It's just, kind of casually mentioned. And I just wanted to hear the detail about it. And I'll tell you
We are the last people that people will abuse, where people will hit, take Mickey out of.
Uh-huh.
Every day someone will say to their mother, hey, look at that funny little man. Yeah. Look at that stupid little man.
Well, that's terrible.
We hate it.
You know, Rusty, I don't know, do you remember that time? I don't know if it was the first time we met, but maybe the second or third time. And it was me, you, and my family. And then I think we were with Mark Dodson and a couple other Star Wars people. But my daughter was there, and she was like about 2.5, 3 years old. And we were all hanging out. You were great playing with her. And she looked at me and she goes, Daddy. And I thought she was going to say something similar to what you just said. But she looks at me and she goes, Daddy, why are you so big?
We've been wondering that about you for a while too.
So she was like, she just thought, you know, she was great with, you know, because, you know, she felt, you know, on you know, on par with you, I guess, whatever. And to me, she felt that I was the oddity, that I was just because I'm a pretty tall guy. But it was, I just thought it was so funny. She's like, "Daddy, why are you so big?"
Kevin, you have a smart daughter.
Yes, absolutely. And Rusty, you know, while you may, you know, be small in stature, you're very big as far as talent goes and personality.
Well, I've had to learn to do it. I've had to learn to get over this bullying, own this bit. You know, people now stop their cars, automobiles on the road, get out and take a photo of me with their cell phones, and they get back in the car. What the hell is that all about? Nice. You know.
And they don't even know you're in Star Wars.
No. No, I'm just a dwarf walking along the road. Hey, look at that funny little man. Let's get a picker. You know.
Wow.
That's what us guys have to be put up with these days. You know.
Well, I'll be your backup in Boston next week. Don't worry about that.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Rusty, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Of course, Kevin will be there with you at the Super Mega Fest, and that's in Massachusetts. Is there a website with that, Kevin?
Supermegafest.com. And, Jimmy, I will see about getting you a recording of the show for your your listeners.
That would be fantastic.
I've got a big listener for two, I think. Yeah.
And
my fan club.
And Rusty, is there anything you want to throw out there, a website or anything like that?
No, I'd just say, yeah, thank you very much. I'm so looking forward to coming over the States again, stateside, because I just love America and American people. I love your fans that come to these shows. They are second to none. They're absolutely amazing. Please turn up at Framlingham, and I look forward to seeing you all.
Oh,
you know, I just love it. Make sure you bring a cow and a Chardonnay Lake.
What?
I do like your steak and wine.
Yes, a cow and a shot. You're going to get it.
I know a good steakhouse near there. I took Jeremy Bullock down the street.
You heard here on the Rebel Force. Kevin's taking me out.
Yes, right. We do have a recording.
Whoa. I never said I was paying for it.
Oh, okay.
All right, I'll take care of it. You got it.
All right, well, I'll let you guys work this out in Massachusetts, okay? Yes. But thank you so much for your time. You are an original, Rusty, an original, and we are so proud to be able to contact you and reach out and hang out here on Rebel Force Radio.
Yeah, I've been reaching out, too, but I've got shorter arms than you have.
Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day. Thank you very much indeed.
Take care.
All right. Bye now.
Bye, Kevin. See you soon.
Bye.
See you, Rusty.
Well, there's nothing rusty on that gonk droid, let me tell you. He remembers it all. He remembers it all. Well, that was great. Thanks for bringing us that. Big thank you to Kevin Lyle and bringing Rusty to us here in the Cantina Rebel Force Radio. And big thanks to all of you for listening. We appreciate it ever so much.
I want to thank the Registered Nerd for leaving us that voicemail, and I hope he does not despair, and I hope he calls us back, because I don't think he actually saw the photograph before he left the message. Maybe he didn't, is what I'm thinking. So if he sees the photo and feels like his mind has changed, call us back, Registered Nerd.
Yes, please do. That number is 708-320-1737. That's 708-320-1RFR. As a reminder, also, we would love to have you become a member of Rebel Force Radio's Patreon community. You can find us there at patreon.com/Rebel Force Radio, and you'll never miss an episode of any of our bonus content, including RFR Rush Hour, RFR Rewind, and RFR Q&A. The email address, if you'd like to send us your opinion, your thoughts, show@RebelForceRadio.com. We're on Facebook. Facebook.com/Rebel Force Radio, the official website, RebelForceRadio.com. Don't forget, the holiday season is approaching. And what better thing to get for the Star Wars fan in your life than a Rebel Force Radio t-shirt or coffee mug? Something to Say It Loud, Say It Proud. Also, iTunes still remains one of the best and most thorough places to subscribe and review just about any podcast you can think of, including Rebel Force Radio. We love to have you subscribe, and we love to have you write those reviews. Just one rule, please.
Make it Mando.
And you can find Rebel Force Radio streaming online at WGNplus.com. We're on YouTube, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, as I mentioned before, iTunes, and just about anywhere else you can find podcasts these days. We'll see you next time.
You didn't laugh at my Mando thing. I thought you'd laugh at that, and you didn't.
Well, it's an outro. I try to leave you all kinds of, you know, room to whatever.
Anyway. I said make it Mando.
Thank you, George. All right, that's it for Rebel Force Radio. I'm Jason.
I'm Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.